Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. We got a busy show. Last week, we weren't on. I know a lot of folks missed us. Appreciate the emails that were sent out to us. Some were good, some were bad. Some were upset that we weren't on because it said it screwed up their Thursday. Well, excuse me. Me and Gabriel are out having some cocktails, relaxing, putting our feet up, and watching the heinous back and forth from all the fans of Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, the stirrup. Now you got Manny supposedly he's crank calling Floyd Mayweather, or they're crank calling each other. You know what I mean? And those Metro phones, man, could be a son of a gun. Anyways, so that's been the whole news about everything here with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Money, Pretty Boy, whatever you want to call him, Mayweather. Is it going to happen? I don't know. And you know what? I got to be honest with everybody out there that's listening is I really don't care anymore. You know, I know now there's talks of Sergio Martinez, if Sergio can make 150. You know what? I just say enough talk. If it happens, it happens. I don't care. Just fight. Enough with the tedious stuff, you know? We don't care about it, man. We just want to get down to the meat. Throw down the steak on the plate, and let's get the carving knife, and let's cut right through it and eat. That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to see. When I go to a restaurant, I don't want to be told, you know, we're going to have this T-bone steak. It's not here yet. We're, you know, they're still chopping up and slaughtering the cow. I don't want to hear none of that. I just want to hear, sir, it's on its way. Gabriel?
Yeah, I'm real sick of it. You know, I think our sick of it is well documented. You know, it just seems like it's become a cottage industry in our sport. You know, in our industry of media, that you just cover every 5 minutes. Dude made a phone call to the other guy. You know, and then another guy follows up. Let me write a story about that. You know, what was said? And all these guys seem to be just absolutely relishing this.
Right.
Attention. You know, I can't tell you what was said, but I know what was said. Come on. How childish is that? I mean, just tell us, does it matter? I mean, were they cordial? At this point, I just don't care.
Yep.
I want to see fights. You know, I'm excited about this, Rigondeaux, Rico Ramos fight this weekend. I know a lot of people aren't.
I am. I mean, you know what?
I think it's going to be a great fight. I think it's going to be a fun fight. And we should celebrate the people that are fighting.
Exactly.
Not the guys talking about it. You know, I mean, honestly, I mean, we talked about this before the show, that we want to talk about this a little bit. But this is really the only thing I have to say about it is all these guys trying to, you know, you need to write the articles blaming Bob Arum. You need to do this. And you know what? You need to worry about you, first off. But here's
mm-hmm.
the other thing. You know, if you and I are superpowers and, you know, we're in the same business for two fighters, let's say, and everybody wants you and I to fight, but we both make a lot of money. We don't really need to fight each other, but everybody would love to see us fight. It would be great for the sport. Probably the way for us to begin negotiations doesn't involve me just saying, well, I've rented this space. I've made this date. Step up, punk. Is that really the way to start it? Or do you call them and say, you know what, guys, I think it's time. Let's sit down and let's negotiate this thing. We'll keep it quiet. Let's do it in a room where nobody hears about it. I know everybody wants it, and they're going to ask the questions. Let's just ignore all that. Let's make it happen. How can we make it happen? All this will, you know, if it's May 5th or not, and, you know, that's just all just silliness. It's Floyd acting like a child. It's Ellerbe encouraging him. Everybody else enabling him. The justice
right.
system pushing back and enabling him as well. I'm honestly just sick of the whole thing. I hope never fight. You know, I'm not going to go so far as to say I hope they both spontaneously combust, but I'm getting close.
You know? I don't really care how it was even presented, to tell you the truth. At this point, you want to do it the childish way, you want to do it the thug way, you want to do it the pretty way, you want to do it the money way, I don't care. Just do it any way and just get it done and over with. You know, 2 weeks ago I was on a radio show, and which was a ringside boxing show, and I appreciate them putting me on, and I had a great time. You know, and after the show they asked me, hey, Dave, what do you think about this? Do you think it's going to happen? I said, you know, when Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Pretty Boy Mayweather were set to fight, it was banned as the World Awaits. The Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight should really be named as the World Can't Wait to get this over with already. You know, we've been in talks of this fight happening, what, 3-4 years? And guess what? We're about as close as we've been 4 years ago with this fight. Negotiations here, negotiations that, it's this and that. I put both blame to the guys, and I keep saying this numerous times. I've said this in the past. Bob Arum is an scapegoat. Manny Pacquiao is just putting him as a front. Does he need Bob Arum anymore? No, he doesn't, but it's a smart move. Maybe that's why Manny Pacquiao went into the politics. You know, he's avoided the questions, he's avoided this, he's avoided that. Now all of a sudden, everybody wants to keep pointing the finger at Bob Arum. There's got to come a time, guys, when you got to finally say, is it really Bob or is it really Manny? Right now, I think it's really Manny. If they're talking, him and Floyd, great. X out the middle guy, just go direct. You guys don't really need promoters. You guys make enough money and you have enough following. Put your money where your mouth is. Get in the ring and settle the settle this supposed score that you have with each other. You know,
the phone call. Bob Arum called it insignificant, and I kind of agree with him. It's Floyd's childish way of doing things. Well, let me call him, and it will. You know,
but you know,
put Manny in this corner. You know, and everybody
right.
says, see. Floyd really wants this fight. The bottom line is May 5th is his problem. They set that date. They try to put all the pressure. He always says, I'm the boss. I make the decisions. I'm the one that makes the offers, not you. He needs to be in charge. That's his kind of neuroses. And he set all this in motion. But you know, the bottom line is you beat a woman, the mother of your kids.
Right.
You pleaded guilty to it. You were supposed to go to jail. You worked out a deal for May 5th. You know, I have a date against an opponent that no one knows who they are because they don't exist yet. Hopefully it's Manny, but he had no opponent. Those are all his problems. Those are
FC's
problems.
No, I agree. Manny's
problems.
Right. I even tweeted it out there. You know what? Everybody's complaining about if Floyd doesn't get Manny Pacquiao, if he doesn't get him, the names have been suggested as Robert the Ghost Guerrero, Saul Canelo Alvarez, and et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of folks are not – they're not happy with it. They're not content with that. And my whole thing was here, there's a guy that had his jail date pushed up because he had a supposed commitment. And the courts – this is how dumb our court system could be sometimes, is that they went off an assumption from Floyd Mayweather. They went off of his word that he has a fight scheduled on May 5th when an opponent that has yet to even said yes to that scheduled date. And I said, if nobody's going to be happy of who he's going to fight, if nobody's supposedly worthy, you know what? Revoke that date, put him in jail, give him his 90 days, and get it over with. You know, why waste our
That's
time?
That's what I would do.
Waste viewers.
Get it over with. You know, get the jail time out of the way. It's not looming. But to even bring it up and say, well, you know, I can't move the date because, you know, the court says I can't move the date. That is your problem. You're the criminal. No one else. This isn't on Manny to make it happen May 5th because Floyd's got a date. He didn't beat up a woman. He's a congressman. He does his own thing. He's actually helping his people. And this whole thing about...
Is he?
He's building a hospital. He's doing all these other things.
Right.
It sounds like he's trying to give back to the people. I think a lot of it is about securing something in power. Any politician, that's what it's about. But the guy generally seems to care about his country. And until he gets caught beating up a woman, I mean, I know he cheated on his wife allegedly and all that stuff. But, you know, that's a whole other episode. But the bottom line is that May 5th and that he needs to make that. That's his problem. It's no one's problem but Floyd.
No,
that people, you know, put it on Manny that, well, it has to happen. Why? Why is it? Neither of these guys are Mexican, and it's a made-up date. Not even really, you know, September 18th is a more significant date to the Mexican people than May 5th. May 5th is, you know, made up by beer companies and salsa companies to sell shit.
I think those are the only two that really hung up is on this date. Well, not Manny, but the Floyd Mayweather fans, for some reason, really hung up on that date. Honestly, Yeah, I know that. You know, this whole 42 have stepped up and 42 have failed. And I say, dude,
God.
Out of all of those 42, how many were picked to fail against Floyd Mayweather? Let's be honest. Same thing with Manny Pacquiao. They both mirror each other. But going back with this whole date here, nobody cares about the date. All we care about is make the fight happen. Just make it happen already. I'm really sick of it. I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of, you know, either emails or even going on YouTube. I have friends on YouTube calling me up talking about it. And I'm like, look, man, there are so many other fights to really talk about. We've already wasted 10 minutes here on Leaving the Ring about two guys that don't want to make up their mind of whether they're going to get in the ring. I give it to you, Floyd. You finally stepped up, and you're really now pushing the envelope of wanting to fight Manny Pacquiao. My only thing was, man, what was this motivation a year ago, 2 years ago, you know? But, hey, I'll take it whenever we can get it. But I'm not going to continue talking about something that, you know, might as well just start doing – you know what? We might as well start having a radio show about Bigfoot. We don't know if it really exists, you know?
Shit.
Anyways, man, we got a great show happening tonight. We got Omar Figueroa, who was on the Showbox, who beat Michael Perez. He's going to be coming on Leaving the Ring, speak to us a little bit about his victory. Then we got some prospects coming on Leaving the Ring, talk to us a little bit. Here we got Joel Diaz Jr. Very excited about hearing from Joel Diaz Jr., who is the replacement fight going to be facing Guy Robb from Brandon Gonzalez pulling out because of an injury. I believe it was a knee injury or something like that. I can't really remember off the top of my head. But I actually think that fight put together on the undercard for this Friday night between Ramos and Rigatón is a much better, you know, I got to say, it's a much better fight as an undercard fight. I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be explosive. And I think it may steal the main event.
That's possible. I mean, there's a couple fights on there. He's the other, he's the co-main event. But I think it's Diaz and Rob is an interesting fight. You know, it's
interesting, man.
Two guys that have taken a fight that several years probably before maybe they should, but it was an open opportunity, and Showbox was really excited about doing it, and so they went forward. You know, and I applaud that. That's what the show is all about. It isn't about in recent years, they've had, like, you know, Tarver, I think, was on there. They were going to have Kelly Pavlik. It was like, it wasn't really Showbox. It was like Old Box, you know. But
yeah.
They're getting really, you know, back to it. I had a long chat with Steve Farhood, you know, who hosts the show. And you know, he feels that they've generally stayed on mission. And I agree with that, you know. And the whole card really is intriguing. You know, Rico Ramos is a guy that, he was getting totally outclassed in his last fight, and then, you know, he lands a huge hook, boom, end of fight. You know,
right.
Great eraser. Can you do that with Rigondeaux, who seems a little bit bigger than? You know, Rigondeaux is kind of a small guy. He's a natural bantamweight. I think, you know, he probably stayed at that weight for a long time, you know, 118, 122 in that range, probably because he's not going to get much bigger, I don't think. I don't know if you've ever seen him in person, but he's not a large man. So I'm very curious to see what the personalities are going to be like. Is Rigondeaux going to be the guy that moves forward and decides, you know what, I've got more power because he has very legit power in both hands. I want to try to get this kid out of there and try to be exciting like they've always wanted me to be. Or is he going to, you know, revert back to counterpuncher mode and we're going to get a rematch of the Cordova fight where you had two counterpunchers staring at each other and the other one hopes the other guy leads. That could be ugly. That's what I really hope it doesn't become. I've got my pick already in my head how I think it's going to go, and it doesn't look good for Rico. That's all I'll say.
You know, man, it's one of these type of fights that you can definitely see two guys that bring skill level up to par. It might be a chess match. It might be one of those where two things could happen here. Rico, we saw him do a little bit of backpedaling in his last fight. You know, Guillermo has been a questionable guy about maybe being explosive, and he sometimes looks like he gets a little bored in that ring. But these are two guys that are really going to have to set the pace. Who wants to set that pace? That's going to be the big question on Friday night. Who decides to be the lead in the dance? And whoever decides may either just do enough to win on the scorecard or does something a little bit more, wakes up the other guy so it picks it up, and then we have an explosive fight. But I tell you what, the undercard with Diaz and Rob, it may just be enough to have our fix where the event, it turns out, the main event ends up really, really being the undercard of the whole segment for Showbox here, man. I'm excited about this fight, you know. Hey, also, too, we're going to have Zachary Woman on with us. He's a prospect, a welterweight prospect. He's going to be fighting at the Woodland War event, right? Is that what he's fighting at? Let me see. Let me make sure here. War at the Woodland Hills event. And we're going to have Donnell Livingston, a good friend of the Leaving the Ring. He's also on that card as well. We got to call in our guest in right now. Let me get that. If you guys want to call in into the show, you certainly can. We'll have the phone lines open in a short bit. Number is going to be 347-215-7598. Again, you can call in, Leave a Ring, speak it up with me, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. 347-215-7598. You got to get through Mr. David Chan first before you can be patched in. So let's get in our first guest, which is going to be Omar Figueroa, who had a great sensational win on Saturday night. I don't know if you had a chance to check out – well, who am I? I'm asking Gabe here if he had a chance. I know he watched it.
Last week, it was kind of a trip. I didn't expect that. He really just took it to him and moved forward. And it was really kind of a difference between, like, professional shots and kind of amateur stuff. It went inside. It was very clear who was comfortable being in there and who wasn't.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I like the fact that here was a guy that had a pure baby face, but...
Hello?
Yeah, can we please speak to Omar?
Yeah, this is him.
Omar, how you doing, brother? This is Dave Duenas with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. This is Leaving the Ring, brother. How you doing?
Fine. This is what, Leaving in the Ring?
Yes, sir.
Oh, is this the guy who was supposed to call me?
Yeah, you got it, man.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I was on the other line with one of the Golden Boy matchmakers, Robert Diaz, the guy who signed. I told him, there's a guy who's going to call me from California.
Uh-huh.
You're from California, right?
Absolutely, man. Down over
okay,
in Cali.
Yeah, so we left the call, and he's going to call me later. Because I told him, he's already on the other line, so...
That's it. Tell him that they come second. We come first, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Omar, first off, congratulations on that fight, man. I was going to, kind of break it down to what I saw with you. Now that I got you online, I want to hear your take. First off, man, I think a lot of people that when they tune in to watch, they seen a young guy with a clean-cut face, a baby face, but... Man, you fought like you didn't even care if you got your nose broken or you got your face reddened up or scarred up a little bit. Where did the mentality come from?
It's my son. I'm his dad.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
You need to talk to him?
Yes, sir. Can we get him on really quick?
Yeah, he's right here. Hello?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good. Can't complain.
Can't complain, huh? Hey, I was congratulations first off. I didn't know I was talking to your dad. My apologies and stuff. And I was mentioning that, when we tune in to watch you, we saw a guy that definitely you have you look really, really young, first off. But you fought like almost like a veteran. You're like, you really kind of just shied away and was not worried about what was going to happen to your face. You just got in the trenches, man. Tell us a little bit about that. Where did that style come from?
Well, it's not a style. It's a mentality. It's a way of life. I consider myself to be a realist. I'm in boxing. It's a brutal sport. It's a combat sport. So, I'm not going to go in there thinking I'm not going to get hit or being scared of me or of getting hit. Like, I know I'm in boxing. I knew that the fight that I was going to be in with him, that I was going to have to get in there. I was going to have to rough him up. I was going to have to make it an ugly fight. I was going to have to, I'm not saying it was an ugly fight, but that's the mentality that I was going in with. Like, I had to go in there, I had to rough them up, and I had to, you know, I had to break them down. So, knowing that, I knew I was going to have to get hit. So, I mean, I had already accepted the fact, and plus, I don't mind getting hit. I like getting hit. It's like adding gasoline to a fire. It's just going to fuel me up, and it's just going to make me burn brighter and harder, and it's just going to make me stronger.
You know, when you were going to his body, he was obviously trying to return the favor. When you were doing that, and he was trying to use his legs, I mean, because, you know, when you had the pre-recording interview, you said, you know, I know he's going to have the first few rounds. I agreed with you. I thought, yeah, you know, Perez was going to have those first few rounds. I thought maybe 3 to 4, even 5 rounds. But it seemed like that second round, when you came out in the second round, you found something, and it seemed like it worked for you. Were you aware of it, or was this that the routine that you just come out and you just do your work?
That's the routine, I guess. I mean, the first round, I kind of go out there to feel them up and see how strong they are, how hard they hit, and how they move in the first round. I'm not taking away anything away from Perez. I mean, he was strong. He hit hard, and I knew it was going to be a tough fight. But I also, the whole training camp, as soon as I found out that I was going to fight him, my mentality was just, there's no freaking way. Like, I kept telling myself, there's no freaking way he's going to lose. There's no freaking way he's going to beat me. There's no freaking way that I'm going to come home without the belt. There's no freaking way that, everything was just that, like, everything.
Right.
I kept telling myself, no matter how hurt I am, no matter how much he hits me, no matter if my arm's broken and my leg's broken, there's no freaking way he's going to beat me. So that's just the mentality that I was going in with. You know, that's what I was expecting already. I was expecting to have my arm broken or my face cut up or my, like, both of my eyes shut, and I was still going to go out there and win that fight. So, you know, I knew he was strong, and I knew he could hurt me.
Right.
But I knew I was going to hurt him too, and I knew I was going to hurt him before he hurt me. And him staying in there and trading punches with me was the worst thing he could have done, because he tried to beat me on my own game, and I already knew he wouldn't. But he tried to prove it to me, or prove me wrong, and he went in there and traded punches. He got hit, and he backed away. And that's the biggest mistake you could have made.
Yeah.
Just try and stay in there and take punches with me, and then shy away.
I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Gable Montoya. Gabe, you there?
Yes, I am. Welcome to the show, man. Congratulations on an excellent win. I was really impressed, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. At what point, you know, it seemed like on the outside you guys were fairly even. You know, you guys could trade jabs, you could trade long-range stuff, but it seemed like you really figured out that if you pressured him, get him to the ropes, and get on the inside and get to his body, he seemed very uncomfortable on the inside, and you seemed like you were at home on the inside. How soon did you realize that was the key?
In the first round, because he decided to stay. I really did expect him to outbox me, to really outbox me, to completely, you know, to make a fool out of me the first couple of rounds, and I was expecting that. I was expecting for him to, you know, I think it was the first combination that he threw, and then he slipped away. He did that matador move, or like the ole kind of move, you know. He moved me with his arms, and I was expecting him to do that, you know, the first couple of rounds, he should have done that, and that's what I was expecting to really, like, for him to make a fool out of me. But I knew that I was gonna get him. Like, even if he did make a fool out of me the first, second round, I knew I was gonna get him. I knew I was gonna get back, and I knew I was gonna, because I had already said, like, there's it's gonna be hard for him. It's really hard for him to keep me away for 10 rounds. It's gonna be hard for him to outbox me, but it's gonna be. Impossible for him to outbraw me, and that's exactly what happened. He tried to stay in there, I don't know why, to save energy or to see if he could break me down by staying in there and trading punches with me to the body, but I guess he just really underestimated me.
Was there a point where he kind of, where you realized that, you could tell that he realized, I made a wrong decision, I need to get out of here, and then at that point, that's kind of when you had him? Did you realize because it seemed like he started to move and change up his game.
Yes, sir. I knew since the second round that I had the fight. Because in the first round he kind of did stay in there and trade punches, but it wasn't like when he backed away, it wasn't because he was hurt. It was because he was working his game plan. But the second round, I know I hurt him, and I know that my punches that he felt my punches in the first round, and I don't know why he would stay in there and trade punches with me. I really don't. I mean, I know that he did it because he knew he was strong. He knew he hit hard. So, I mean, I figured he was gonna try and break me down because he did hurt me with a couple of those body shots. But like I said, my mentality was just, no matter how hard I am, no matter how much I'm beat up, no matter what, there's no freaking way he's gonna beat me.
Right. When he was throwing his punches, because obviously in the beginning you were feeling the steam behind those punches and what people were relating to, saying that he was a pretty good puncher. Did it decrease after the rounds? I mean, when you go into his body, did you feel his punches still the same, or did you start noticing, you know what, he's not hitting as hard, so I could pick it up a little bit more?
I noticed, like I said, in the second round that he was mine, and after that, I didn't really pay much attention to what he did. I was just waiting for the moment where I was gonna get him and finish him. So yeah, but you could tell watching the replays, you can tell he was just pushing his punches. By the end of the second round, third round, and his punches had nothing behind him.
You know, when he did decide to trade with you, because I agree with you, that was the dumbest thing he could have done, was sit there and try to trade with you. Do you think maybe it was because he was having some minor success landing, and he probably thought, this guy's a little easier to hit, so I probably can get him out of here a little earlier?
Yes. Yeah, like I said, he was expecting it to hurt me and finish me off, because he had even said that in the interviews or whatever,
right,
that I got to see. But the thing was that he really underestimated me, and that's what caused him to believe all of that. And like I said, I mean, it's just, you can't underestimate your opponent.
What about this whole pasta thing that Showtime was kind of bringing up, man? What do you think about that?
Well, they were just, it's because a couple of things happened. I mean, the weather is different. Here in the valley, it's super humid. It's like 80-90% humidity.
Right.
So even walking around, you start to break a sweat. So when I'm here in the valley, I don't have any problems with weight. Like, I could be 20 pounds heavier 2 weeks before, and I could lose that. Like, I can lose that and not feel weak or not feel, you know, fazed by it. But over there, since the weather is completely different, it's super dry.
Right.
I had trouble losing weight the first couple of days I was there, and then it got hard, and I had to get used to, I had to get acclimated to finally start breaking the sweat or, you know, losing some weight. But either way, I was already down at weight, and the night before, a couple of things happened that you know, us as a team, that we don't really have as good a communication with Joel, and you know, just things happen, and I didn't end up making weight. I knew I would, but I just, you know, I had a couple of mishaps, but I didn't feel affected by that at all, because I had, like I said, I was making weight the right way. And, I was using the pasta to cargo load, and I wasn't worried about the weight. I wasn't worried that I was going to be weak. I've been through that before.
Absolutely.
Looking ahead, you know, you came up with this win, and a lot of people were looking at, you know, the artist and saying, you know, that's going to be the guy. And certainly, I thought the corner stoppage was perfect. The stoppage of the fight, you know, they saved him for another day.
I thought
the fight was only going to get uglier for him as it went on. And that's what you do with the prospect. You pull the plug and you let him fight another day. He's a quality fighter. You know, you just were better on the night. What's the future for you? Obviously, Golden Boy's talking to you. What are they saying? And if you can't say, we understand. But how soon will the turnaround be for you?
Well, I have a fight set for March 17th here in my hometown. And after that, I don't know, we like to take one fight at a time because I've had a lot of instances where my luck just, you know, isn't the best. And things happen, my hands mess up, or I cut my leg, or something always happens. I start getting sick. Actually, you know, the day of the weigh-in, I weighed in and everything, and I went about my day. And that same night, I'm real prone to getting sick from my tonsils and my throat and everything. And that night, I got super sick. I got my tonsils got so swollen, hurt so much to the point where if I even turned my head, it would hurt. And I was all congested. My head was hurting. My body was aching. My legs felt tight. I was like, come on. Like, I already had trouble making weight. Now I'm getting sick. Everything was just, you know, not going my way, and it always happens. Aside from the fact that hiding is a tough sport, like, there's so many things outside of it that can factor in and make it even harder, you know, so much adversity that one has to overcome and to make the weight or make the fight. And I started getting sick, so, I mean, something always happens, but, I mean, I don't know, we keep the faith and we stay strong and we always manage to overcome it.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, do you think this was a breakthrough for you? I mean, do you think it's a mental thing that things always go wrong, that you're somehow kind of self-sabotaging, or is it just you just have shitty luck?
I think I just have shitty luck. Because,
hey, fair enough.
Yeah, because honestly, I mean, when my last fight, October 21st, I was supposed to fight a guy who I had already fought, Eric Cruz from Puerto Rico. He had won the WBC youth, the WBC version of my belt, the title that I won.
Right.
So I was supposed to fight him, and I was sparring in Philadelphia. I was helping Danny Garcia and a couple of other guys that were there. We were all sparring together. And everything, the whole camp went great. Everything was going great. I was putting up 8-10 rounds every time. I was looking good. I was looking sharp. I was getting my timing down. Everything was looking good. Last day of sparring. We were there, when was it, Saturday? Yeah, the last day of sparring was Saturday, and I was coming back home Sunday to finish off my training here in the Valley, in my hometown. The last day of sparring, I think I was going to do just six rounds. I was in the second round. And that's when I slipped and cut my leg. And I didn't think it was a big deal because it's happened before. You know, your leg slips off the ring, whatever, it gets bruised, you get a little scrape, and that's it. So I kept sparring, and I noticed that my leg was hurting, but I figured it was just because of, you know, the bruise or whatever.
Right.
So the round ends, I go to the corner, I'm stretching and stuff, and I look down at my leg, and I see that it's bleeding. Then I did the double take. And I was like, what? I saw the big gas. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, seriously.
Oh, man.
It was like a four-inch gap, like gas. And it was like an inch wide. You could see my bone. You can see all my ligaments and stuff. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, it's the last freaking day of flying. I'm going to go home. I was set to go home the next day. I was going to start my training camp here, and my leg is split open during sparring. It's like, how does that happen? And the nail that I slit my leg open on was the only nail that was sticking out on the entire ring.
So,
you know, that's why I consider myself shitty luck, because it's like, come on.
The luck of a Mexicano, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
damn it.
It's like, damn, but like, I don't think it's a mental thing. I think, I don't know, someone's just screwing with me, or, I don't know, voodoo, something.
Right. Hey, let me ask you before we let you go really quick here. You know, because obviously you were put in as an opponent for Michael the Artist Perez. How surprised was Golden Boy after? I mean, did they show you a sign of confidence? I mean, or were they confident that you were going to win this fight?
Several people, I can't mention any names.
Right.
But a couple of people were dead set that I was going to win. They knew that I was going to win. And, Well, they've always believed in me since day one, and they knew what I had. Like they know the potential that I had, and I think everybody else was taking me as the underdog. I mean, I knew they were considering me the underdog. I knew what they were doing.
Right.
The results, the effect that's happening to me because of the fight, they were expecting that, they were wanting that to happen with Fedor. You know, two undefeated fighters, both of them prospect, but they were favoring him. So they were like, you know what, like this guy has supposedly been fighting bums. He's gonna beat this guy. They're gonna see that he was undefeated as well, and then his stock is gonna go way up. So. I can say that they were very surprised, except for those couple of people that I know that weren't. But I think everybody else was. I think Fedor's camp was most surprised.
Right. Yeah, I think so too, man. I gotta say, their face was a little confused in what they were seeing happening here. Let me ask you: if they would ask for a rematch, is that something you guys are interested in doing again?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I'm not, like I said, I don't shy away from anybody in the ring. I'm actually, and I've said it many times before, I'm looking for a challenge. Like, that's what I'm in boxing for. I'm in boxing to prove that I'm the best. I'm in boxing to prove that I'm for real, and I'm in boxing to prove that, you know, I want to make a name for myself, and I want to represent my people in the best way possible. So the fighter, whoever the fighter is, I don't care who they are. Like, if Golden Boy's going to put me up against Pacquiao, my next fight, I really wouldn't mind. I just try my best to give the fans what they deserve, and the fans deserve a good fight.
Absolutely. Well, Omar Figueroa here with us on Leaving in the Ring. Hey, Omar, thanks again, brother, for coming on with us and speaking to us, man. It was a pleasure. Keep in touch, and we'll try to keep up with you, brother.
Yes, sir. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
You too, man.
There you go. Omar, man. I mean, you know, prospect, I like this kid a lot. I got to tell you that. You know, he looks like a baby, but he sure doesn't fight like one. I mean, if he is a baby, this guy knows how to gnaw at you and scratch and bite. It's all that he can do. I mean, Mike Perez, you're right. Here is a guy that a lot of people were really hyped on, and they were thinking this kid, he's going to blow out this kid who really, in his face, he had no signs of stress of experience. You know what I mean? There was not a wrinkle in the face to tell you that he's been in the ring with that particular style, which is come forward and go to the trenches to land big shots and work your man to the corner. I think everybody was surprised. And just like he said, you know, Perez's corner was really, really surprised. Yeah, they were, man. I don't think they were expecting. I think if anything, they saw this young Mexican kid and they're like, ah, look at him. He's pretty. We'll get rid of him.
Yeah, what I liked about it was that, you know, you could just tell, like, the expression on his face, he was not surprised that he was, you know, that he came out victorious in this fight. It was what he came to do, is what he came to get done. He worked that body, and he did it, you know, when they both came together, it was like everything just fell right into place for him. And you know, he let Perez know, like, I'm not the one, dude. I'm not a stepping stone. I'm not just some guy here for you to look good against. This is my
yep.
shot. You know, we saw this last year, you know, in that Javi Molina fight as well. You know, it's some nights, you know, there's a hungry guy out there waiting to beat you at all times. You may not face him now. You may face him down the line. But there's somebody for everybody in this sport. And if a matchmaker screws up, or even if they don't, everything on paper, you know, and on video looks like, hey, this guy's style is perfect for you. If you fight the right fight, you can beat him. Sometimes things just don't go that way. And
you know,
it's really refreshing to see.
Absolutely. And you know the thing, too, with Ken Hirschman moving over to HBO, a lot of folks were worried, including myself, of the matchmaking that Showtime, you know, was giving us in the past. And a lot of us were thinking, having the thoughts of, now that Ken Hirschman is leaving HBO, would the matchmaking continue? Would we end up getting some matches that were not so, you know, appealing, especially when you get Jermaine Taylor and you know, Andre Durrell back on the card, which that was not very appealing. But I got to tell you, they're really kind of sticking to the tradition of what they've been doing since 2005 when they put Diego Corrales and Jose Luis Castillo in together to fight each other. They're still having that same type of formula, and I like it. I like that they're matching up their guys tough, and I like the fact they're matching them equally so that boxing fans could really get a chance to see some real guys that really have to muster up and dig deep to see who they really are in that ring. I love it, man.
Yeah, it's the place where you go to find out the truth is inside the ring. You know, everything can be stacked in your favor. You know, at the end of the day, when you get in there, for your fight, it's two guys with two arms. Anything can happen. It all comes down to how you prepare. It all comes down to what it is you really truly want, and understanding who you are, understanding your identity, understanding your strengths. And you know, like he said, I expected to be outboxed, you know, and look stupid for a while, but I was going to get to him. You know, that kind of Margarito mentality. That's
right.
Awesome.
I love that. You know, I like a fighter that's just going to be upfront and honest and understands his limitations, but understands with those limitations, you can overcome them. You can get over those hurdles if you just put in the work. And you believe in yourself. That is a key thing for fighters nowadays. You got to really believe in yourself. You know, you could tweet that you're the best. You could put on your Facebook that you're the best. You could say repeatedly over and over and over, I'm the best, I'm the best. But when it really needs to count, it's in that ring. You know, we've said it numerous times. That ring is really, it's a lie detector. It's going to tell us whether or not you're that real, true grit fighter that you keep speaking about or where your entourage keeps, you know, praising all about. I love kids that go, you know what, I know he's going to do this, and I know that I'm not flashy in that department, and I don't have the strength in that department, but what I'm good at, I'm going to apply it, and I'm going to apply it hard. I'm going to put everything behind it. I'm going to become a jackhammer, and that's what that did. That's what that kid Omar did, man, and I just got to sit back, and I go, this is the real reason why I watch boxing. It's not for the guys that's throwing money at the camera. It's not for the guy that's, you know, sitting in the congressman's seat. It's guys like this that really honestly put the sport before anything else, before money, before getting fans and all that. They put the sport in front, and that means getting in the ring and fighting that ring. Let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk boxing here on Leave It in the Ring. You can call 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas or Gable Montoya. Man, we got a lot of stuff here, and it's going to be a little crazy here on Leaving the Ring because I'm going to actually be getting on the road in about another half an hour heading out to the airport, flying up in the sky. Hopefully I come back down, Gabriel. You know, the whole Titanic thing, recurring Titanic, you know, sinking and stuff, man, and the tragedies, man. You know,
yeah,
but let's put it.
You don't sound like you have Omar's luck, so you should be fine.
I do have Omar's luck. I stubbed my toe. Three times. Who stumps their toe three times? You know? let's get some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. CT, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Good, man.
Good, man.
Hey, I just want to talk about the Rigondeaux fight versus Ramos. I think it should be a pretty good fight. I mean, everybody's picking Rigondeaux, but I'm giving Rico Ramos a little bit of a chance here. I mean, the thing about him, he seems to me, especially in his last fight, he's kind of unsure of himself in the ring. And he has these lapses, and it's just like, you know, when he's able to put punches together like he did in that seventh round, I think he should do pretty well if he uses his jab along with it against Rigondeaux because he is the taller fighter. But I think Rigondeaux is just a superb counterpuncher, and he's definitely experienced as a fighter all around, being in amateurs and everything. I think it should be pretty competitive, but I'm picking Rigondeaux with a late stoppage.
I'm on the fence on this one, man, to tell you the truth. You know, I agree with you, and I agree with Gabe about Rigondeaux. But Ramos, too, this guy has power in his hands, and he could really turn the fight around with one shot. But it's to me, though, it really has to be – it's really got to be Rigo where he's got to apply that pressure to get – Ramos to be lucky with that kind of shot. You know what I mean? If they decide to make it a technical bout, I agree. I think that Rigondeaux is going to be able to do exactly what he needs to do because he's going to have a guy that's really unsure and going to be hesitant. And that's one thing you can't do in boxing. You cannot sit back and be hesitant. You know, it's just like driving. If you're going to switch lanes, switch lanes. You don't hesitate and then look back and keep looking and not figuring out. That's how people get into car crashes. The same thing with boxing.
Well, right, yeah, and it almost seemed like he waited till like the seventh round to unleash, you know, what he had, and you really can't do that. And he was getting whipped by somebody who's, I mean, the Japanese guy that he was fighting was pretty good, but he wasn't on that level, you know what I mean? He should have did that from the beginning, but, you know, you just can't do that against Rigondeaux. I think Rigondeaux is a superb counterpuncher. I'm sorry, go ahead, kid.
Well, I just, you know, I don't usually like to say a punch is lucky, but Ben's a lucky punch.
I know.
That's why I was saying, you know, we're lucky shot. But, you know, man, the kid's fast.
I wanted to call George Peterson and say, now that, my friend,
is
that
lucky.
Is a lucky punch.
I will say this, though. He did land that same kind of punch about two times before that. I would say at the beginning of the round or the round before that, he landed that same type of shot. But with this, you know, that one shot that he did land, it caught the Japanese guy right on the chin. So he does have some pretty good power, but I just, you know, like you said, he kind of waits too much and he's unsure of himself, and I think in this fight he's probably going to see the same thing happening. I don't think he can, you know, win the fight with that type of style.
Well, this is the thing, too. You got two guys that honestly are really patient, you know what I mean,
right,
to land particular shots. And it really, I've kind of seen these guys step up to oppositions where they kind of know more or less that, you know what, I can take them out. But if they can't really figure out without that first, second round, I've seen both guys kind of revert to a more of a safe style. I don't know if you agree on that, Gabriel, but that's what I've seen out of both guys. And that's why with this fight here, it is going to be a chess match. But two outcomes, like I mentioned earlier, two outcomes could happen. Either one guy just does enough to beat the other guy on the scorecards, or that same person that does do enough sparks up a fire that really lights up the bush, and then we got a fight.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a really fun fight, and it also has potential to be a snoozer. You know, we're just sitting there going, really? This
yeah.
is horrible. And this fight has bounced around, like, two, three different venues and dates. It was like the fight that no one wanted, you know, but it's a mandatory, and so it has to happen. And so here we are, you know. I'm glad the TV kind of got behind it. But this whole card is a bit of a celebration of the little guys. Which I kind of like, you know, with Joel Diaz, you know, on there, and then this fight as well. It's just kind of refreshing. Everybody's always looking for that heavyweight. Everybody wants the big puncher. You got these little guys that are going to provide some serious action because of their work rate. But this fight, to me, I'll go out with it now. It doesn't have to be a secret all show. I'm taking Rigondeaux in eight rounds. Somewhere 8 or 9 rounds. I think he's, you know, Rico, like you said, he landed those two shots. He kind of found something, and then he landed it for real and knocked the guy out.
Right.
It still felt like a really lucky shot. But
yeah.
He's got intelligence, and he's got skills. I don't think he's as complete as Rigondeaux. When they come inside, I think Guillermo is going to be a better technician on the inside. He's more comfortable doing kind of everything in this
right.
fight. Whereas Ramos is relying on youth, speed, his athleticism to kind of get by, and he's done that for a while. I think against a guy like, you know, when everything's equal, you have to find the one thing that separates them. And I think two things separate them, a higher ring IQ and a more all-around crisper technique, and all those things fall for Guillermo Rigondeaux. I think he's got legit power. I've never really seen... You know, I can't. It's hard for me to say he's going to just straight knock him out. I think he's going to hurt him and kind of go off and finish him off that way along the ropes. And it's going to be a TKO. That's you know, specific pick, but that's what I see.
Yeah, I can agree with that. That's what I see happening too. A late round stoppage, like around the 9th, 10th round.
Sure.
Hopefully, maybe the winner can face the winner out of Donaire versus Vasquez.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Or maybe
even Arce, you know, the winner of this, maybe face Arce and do it unified.
I wonder if Arce would do that. I mean, he's on an interesting run. You know what? Speaking of Arce, it's kind of interesting. Somebody pointed out to me, and I didn't even notice this, that and I feel like an idiot for not. But you know who his strength and conditioning coach is?
For who?
Really?
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was
wow.
told, yeah. It's kind of interesting. He's had this late career surge. He's working with Memo. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. Planting seeds, you know.
Good thing. Good thing. We just got the memo then.
Yeah. That's what somebody told me. I haven't, like, confirmed it, but then I looked up an article, and sure enough. And Christian Mahadas, I guess, employed him as well.
Really?
I think
wow.
He's on a little run himself. Interesting.
That is interesting.
I just have one more question, guys. Do you know if the Khan and Peterson fight is going to be a rematch, or are they still just, you know, in the clause of talking about it? I know the WBA's already ordered a rematch, but they're just waiting for IBF.
God,
oh,
what
Peterson, go ahead, Dave.
What I was going to say was that the thing that I heard is that Khan already just dropped the whole fact that there's not going to be the rematch, and he's going to focus on another fight. But he's still bitter about it. He's still tweeting out being, now you're ducking me, you're afraid of me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Peterson's been awfully quiet. I know he's made some quotes, but we've tried to contact him, but I'm not really sure what exactly. I don't know what you know, Gabe, but I don't know exactly where his head's at and where he's what direction they're going to go with now.
Well, I think he's trying to enjoy being champion, which is what
right.
They're not allowing him to do. And what I said they would never let him do. Khan is trying to become the people's champion, and really I think he's kind of turning people off. Even some Brits are telling me that they don't respect the way he's going about things. But what I understand is that the WBA ordered the rematch. But he's got two belts, Peterson, and the IBF, whatever reason, Khan and them dropped it in the 11th hour. And my theory is that, one, two things. They weren't going to win that appeal. I just flat out know that. They were not going to win that appeal. But two, and I think the WBA put themselves in a really bad position. Roberto
yeah,
Mendoza kind of came out publicly before they even had a hearing, before they really looked over the evidence and said, we're going to give him a rematch. Like, you know, they didn't even have the hearing. I thought that was very biased, very unfair.
Right.
Poor form on his part. But Golden Boy, this wasn't about getting justice. This was about getting what they couldn't because Peterson was a mandatory, which is a rematch clause. And so they forced it. I mean, they pretty much snowballed over the fact that the dude did lose points for cheating or, you know, for what the ref deemed fouling. Cheating is a little bit different, but it is fouling.
Right.
And so, sorry, but you lost those points. You fought that way. You lost the fight. You can't, you know, you sell some tickets, you don't sell a hell of a lot, so you ended up in Washington, D.C., hoping to double down, which is a smart promotional move, but dangerous for the star fighter. It all backfired. There's just a lot better way they could have gone about going for this rematch. They could have just said, hey, this is a tough fight. I really like my redemption. I want my belts back. All props to the new champion, but, you know, I deserve a shot to get it back. And I wonder, you know, with a good money offer, deciding where they wanted to do it again. If he would have lost in a better fashion from the moment that they talked to him on HBO and he's dogging out Washington, D.C. while standing in the middle of Washington, D.C., if he would have lost with class, we might just be talking about the rematch. But I think Peterson's done the exact right thing. Why fight this battle in the press? I'm the champion. And you can litigate. You can do whatever you want to do. The
exactly.
belts are mine. And they could even strip one of the belts. I'll just take the IBF. Fine. That's one less sanctioning fee. But I'm the champion. I beat your ass. The way it goes. You know,
silence too is the best way to just really stop the nonsense. And I think Lamont, by being just completely silent and really not saying a whole lot, it was the best way. It was the more responsible way of handling this, you know. And Amir just, you know, to me, I don't know whether if he's lost fans or he's gained fans, but I'm just like, man, you know, you made yourself look bad after the fight, and you just haven't seemed to get it. Like, you keep continuously making yourself look bad. Get over
yeah.
it. Move on. Fight the fights in the ring and win them in the ring. You know, stop saying that everybody's afraid of you and everybody's ducking you, because when there's fighters out there that have said, you don't want to fight me and you're ducking me, you don't have a response to it. But anyways,
yeah.
CT, thanks, brother, for calling in, man. I'm going to put you back on hold, brother.
All right, thanks a lot.
Anyways, if you want to call in, you certainly can. We got Joel Diaz Jr., the prospect, going to be fighting on Showbox this Friday night at the Palms in Las Vegas. He's going to be going against Guy Robb out of Sacramento, I believe. I believe he's out of Sacramento. I know he's down from that way, right, Gabe? Yeah, I think
Guy Robb?
Yeah.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Anyways, he's going to be calling in.
After my time.
Yeah, he's going to be calling in, and Duell Diaz Jr., who a lot of folks are really high on this kid, he's I like him. I definitely want to see him get in. I'm excited to see him get in the ring. I think this is a great matchup between him and, Guy Robb. It's one of those matchups that can go to either way. It's a 50-50. Both guys are highly decorated. And what more can you say about it, you know? Until we see him get in that ring, I think then you guys are going to understand what I was more or less talking about. But Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Mr. Gable Montoya. Got to get through Mr. David Chen first. Let's pass in some more Fight Fans before we get Joel Diaz on the line with us here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with Dwayne. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. I was just calling in to talk about Friday Night Fights, if you guys haven't got to that already.
No, we haven't. Go for it, man.
Oh, okay. Well, that Ugas fight in Almaraz, that was pretty cool. But the Tion Kennedy and Martin, I really wasn't too interested in that fight. With the Ugas fight, I don't know. I hate to quote Teddy Atlas, but, you know, I felt he could have stepped it up maybe a little bit. Almaraz was a tough guy, though, being an ex-military vet and all that stuff. But I don't know. My personal opinion is I think he could have got him out of there, you know?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting fight because, you know, the guys are neither guy really punches very hard. And just real quick, yeah, no mas on the Ugas. Thank you. I don't need to see that man. He would bore up my TV screen ever again. I don't even think it was his opponent.
I think what killed it.
Power, you know.
What killed it too was making the comparisons. You know what I mean? That killed it for a lot of folks.
Just don't tell me doesn't fight like a Cuban, and then he comes out and he fights like a Cuban.
Yeah.
He did. But to the main event, you know, I thought that Kennedy, you know, won. You know, he's coming off. Well, they're both coming off losses. I mean, I think they both fought smart. I think Martin though. I think he fought too smart. I think he kept looking for that perfect moment, perfect shot, way too long. He was waiting for something, and not
right.
Letting his hands go. And when you don't have a lot of power, you got to make up for it with something.
Volume.
Yeah, he's got speed, he's got movement. Well, even just, you know, it doesn't even have to be like Tion Kennedy volume, where you're just throwing your hands and touching the other guy. But, you know, at least some nice, crisp combinations. I thought he found a home for the right hand, you know, and did some things very nicely, but it was all about effort, and Kennedy seemed to have the effort, pushing
right.
forward. He was, you know, if you're standing at a distance, he was looking like the guy that was winning. He's coming forward, and his hands were moving, and the other guy kept backing out of there.
So that was the whole thing. You know, Martin obviously was countering, and he was landing the more telling blows, I thought. But it was in spurts. You know, and I honestly can't score a fight for a guy that just occasionally will throw something here and there and always keep looking for that perfect shot. You know, Kennedy to me was just doing exactly what he was supposed to do. He kept digging. He kept shoveling. He made sure that he was always in that pocket. He closed the distance. He did the more general of ring generalship in that fight, and that's why I thought that he did enough to walk away with the victory.
I think it seemed to me like Martin was, like, trying to steal rounds. Like, even a couple times you can catch
right.
him looking up at the clock or whatever, and then all of a sudden I guess he would decide to throw punches. But it was just an okay fight to me. Like, Kennedy, he did outwork him, but it wasn't, like, hard shots. And, yeah, I don't know what you guys think, but to me it seems like he was an inside fighter, but he was smothering his own shots. Like, as he would get close to him, he would keep getting closer, end up laying on the guy or holding on to the guy, and then the guy get broken up. And all
he gassed out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he really gassed out. I mean, that's when you see a fighter that starts smothering his punches, you know, and really starts leaning on another guy, it kind of tells you he didn't do the road work, you know. I think a lot of times too with those shots that he was throwing, those were the, you know, digging deep and try to find the fourth wind out of your body to try to land shots. The other thing too that you mentioned is a great point. You know, when Martin looking at the clock, you know, that really sways judges in a lot of ways too. Not just the audience and people are tuning in to watch you, because when I see a guy look at a clock, there's two things that I'm thinking of. Either he's like not wanting to be in the ring, you know, yeah, or he's doing exactly the other. But and a lot of times when you see a guy not putting in enough effort, you start getting the sense that he's just hoping that these rounds run out so he can get out of there and go home.
Moving. Not much of a game plan mm-hmm. as far as, you know, that involved like standing your kind of back and Tion Kennedy up. To me, I mean, that's kind of what you got to do with him. He's like a little Glenn Johnson. He's just going to keep rolling forward, throwing those hooks. Yeah, he'll take your shot, but you're Chris Martin. You don't hit that hard, so it's not going to deter him. But at the same time, I mean, in terms of entertainment value, all that, I thought the fight kind of flatlined. You know, it seemed to just kind of hit one note. You know, one guy throwing a couple shots at a time or one shot at a time. Other guy kind of throwing volume. We're not heading towards a knockout. We're heading towards a close decision that we may or may not have to argue about. I thought Kennedy won it. I thought he should have won it. I was, you know, it was weird. I was a controversial draw, majority draw.
Right.
Usually it's a controversial win, but yeah, this one I was just like, I didn't feel like Kennedy didn't do enough to be called the winner, and I didn't feel like Chris Martin did enough to be called the winner.
Too upset with the draw, but I just thought that Kennedy did do enough. I thought he'd edge it out because he showed the effort to me, you know what I mean? And when you put, even though they're pity-pat shots, you know, I know folks were like, well, I don't really count the pity-pat shots, but he was moving. When you had a guy,
Martin wasn't doing anything.
Yeah, he was the fresher guy too. Even on that last round, he was the fresher guy. He looked like the more composed dude. He looked like he could still land the heavier shots and the cleaner shots. When you had Kennedy, he was squaring up. His forehead was leaning on Martin's shoulder and chest. When I see a guy like that, dude, take the opportunity. And Martin did not take that opportunity. He didn't show me. You know what I mean? He didn't show me I'm going to finish strong.
He did a lot of things out of his hands.
Yep.
Because you brought that up. Hey, Kennedy did square up a whole lot. He was getting up hit with uppercuts pretty easily, you know.
Exactly.
I thought Martin would be able to take advantage of that. I just seen a lot of flaws in both guys. And like as a fight went on, you know, I kind of was like, yeah, who cares? You know, either way, you know.
I feel bad because, they gave effort. You know, it wasn't like a bad fight for, like, lack of effort.
Yeah.
It was just
I don't hate the guys.
Right.
It was like an urgency or something missing. Probably, I think, really, there was danger from somebody getting hit by a punch. There was a lack of danger from somebody getting hit by a punch that would knock them out. That's the, you know, when you get into that whole MMA versus boxing debate, what I've always said is, you know, I think for people that are new to watching fighting or looking for something more, the MMA style or the mixed martial arts or UFC is kind of geared towards maximum violence. There's multiple ways to get knocked out. There's multiple ways to be stopped. And there's kind of an anything can happen feel. I think TV programmers need to be, and TV packagers need to be more aware that we're there to see people get knocked out. You can fool yourself and keep saying, you know, I love me a good chess match. I like an important fight with a lot of skills going on and two guys, you know, the fainting. That is beautiful. Like an Andre Ward, what he does is beautiful. I want to see him knock somebody out and do that too.
That's true.
You know, it doesn't have to be backyard bums beating each other up.
Right.
But give me a possibility. Only put one, you know, if you got to put a guy with no power on TV, make sure the other guy has the capability of possibly one punch knocking him out. Then we got something interesting to watch. But two guys with these styles, you know, Tion Kennedy would normally be that guy with power. Or Chris Martin, I guess it would be, like a Martinez, a fast guy with one punch knockout power. You got to give me that because this is, you know, two guys just going distance.
Really quick, let me put my two cents in this. You know, this was a fight that on paper looked fantastic, terrific. We thought we were going to get something, you know, marginally special. But what we end up having is one guy with the lack of motivation and another guy the lack of cardio. That's what happened with this fight here, you know?
You know, I think if you find both guys, you know, and you know, have the work rate of Kennedy and then, you know, Martin's cardio and movement and boxing ability and make one guy of them, you'd have, like, a great fight or fighter, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. Maybe. Hey, Dwayne, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? We got to get some other guys on.
All right,
thanks,
take
man.
It easy.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. We got Joel Diaz Jr., prospect, calling in at 6:15. He's going to talk about his fight with Guy Robb that's happening on Showbox and in the card. And it's in the Palms in Las Vegas. It's going to be a hell of a fight, man. Let's patch in another fight fan. Let's go with Don. What's up? You're on Leaving the Ring right now. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, I just got something I got to get off my chest.
Go ahead.
Hey, it's all about Hopkins, man. I can't stand him. He's holding up the light heavyweight division right now. You guys agree with me?
You know, it's funny. I had a conversation about that a little earlier, and I agree, man. I'm like, you know, some folks are like, what's going to happen? I'm like, you know what? You know, the thing is that Hopkins, in reality, has been doing a little bit of cherry picking himself. It's just that we've been kind of dismissive of it or forgiving because of his age. The whole age thing, the whole age barrier has been like an acceptance for us to go like, well, it's okay, he's going to pick and fight this guy because he's this age. You know what I mean? But it's got to come to a point, man, we got to pull that sheet and go, look, dude, you need to start fighting some real fighters now. Enough with the age thing. We know that you can go out there and still in condition and do damage. Step up, be competitive, be a competitor, do exactly what you're supposed to do as a fighter. You know, don't do exactly what you used to do with other guys were doing to you in your career. You used to cry and yell and scream that nobody would want to fight you. Now you're doing the exact thing to these young guys that are trying to make a name for themselves.
Exactly, exactly. And one other thing, Ismael Salak, when are we going to see him more, man? I'm checking out on YouTube, and man, he looks like a new version of Muhammad Ali. I got to say, I love me some Ismael Salak.
Yeah, I'd like to see him on TV. He's got some things going on. He's definitely a fun style. His last fight that was on TV, as I recall, was exciting.
I think he's fighting again. I think he's fighting soon, to tell you the truth. If I remember correctly, we got a press release about him getting back in. I just don't know if it's going to be televised here, to tell you the truth. You know?
But the point about Hopkins, I agree with you that His age is to Hopkins as size is to Manny Pacquiao. Yeah, they always bring it up. He's a little guy. Look at what he's accomplishing. He's beating an incredibly slow Mexican at 150 pounds for a 154-pound belt. You know, wonderful. When is he going to fight somebody real with that weight? Throw him in a cage with James Kirkland. See what happens. They're never going to do it. So to me, you know, Hopkins, if any division, I don't necessarily agree with that he's holding it up. I think he's holding that, you know, there's that rematch. He doesn't want to do it with Chad Dawson. He wants to go somewhere else. And everybody's kind of looking to him as the kind of one of the cash cows, or at least a named scalp that they would like to have. But to me, the guys that they should be chasing, Lucien Boutte or hoping that he comes up, or they should be going after John Pascal because he actually sold tickets. Really, the 175-pound division is, you know, like you look at Tavares Cloud, he's underpromoted. That's really his problem. Not that he's chasing Hopkins or Hopkins is out there. You can ignore a name. Just the way that Floyd Mayweather and Manny kind of operate in a vacuum, Hopkins kind of operates in his own vacuum. And it's your choice whether to try to enter it and force your way into that and get into those sweepstakes or just to ignore it and do your own thing, which is what I said, you know, Sergio Martinez should have done last year. There was a video that we didn't get to use. They said we showed too much training stuff. I sure would like to release because, in my opinion, it's the best Sergio Martinez video out there. I showed it to Dave. I was watching it the other night. I was showing somebody the editing that Brian Hardy did on it. He does all our Max Boxing videos. And Sergio Martinez said about 2011, so ironic, this is going to be the year that I solidify everything, that I solidify my career. And enter the number one pound for pound. He really thought everything was going to come together. And look at the 2011 he had. And it was because he chased those other guys and tried to get into their vacuum
their little, you know, their little alternate universe boxing world, instead of doing what he was doing, which was carving his own path in this way that everybody could get behind. I couldn't stress enough that, you know, Tavares Cloud just needs to keep fighting. That's his problem. He doesn't get in the ring. You know, it's not his fault. It's his promoter's fault. All these guys just need to fight more often. Austin Trout needs to fight more often.
Right.
You know, that guy's willing to do it. You know, he just needs to keep fighting the way he's fighting. But to me, you can't really – there's so much blame placed around in boxing. You can't look at one guy and say, you know, Bob Arum's holding up this fight and all that. What are you doing? Worry about you. You know, Floyd, you know, that whole thing, that's all his doing, his date, all that. And like Luda Bella screaming at Bob Arum, you know, put my guy in with Chavez Jr. Meanwhile, they kind of wasted 2011. You know, worry about you. Promote yourself into a position where they can't ignore you. Let the fighter fight himself into that position. But the promoters need to do that job too. Then nobody's really holding up the division. Instead,
right,
everybody's moving it forward. You know, I don't know, it'd be a long rant, but you know, that's how I look at it. You know, it's to me, boxing isn't proactive a lot of the time. They like to shoot themselves in the foot and then complain that their foot's bleeding and they don't do anything about it. You know, instead, you know, get yourself to a hospital, get yourself right, and get some gun lessons. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Love the show.
Hey, Don, thanks very much
for
calling in, brother. You take care. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We're going to keep the show rolling. We're going to be waiting for a little bit. Five more minutes, we should have Joel Diaz Jr. here on Leave It in the Ring. Really excited about having the prospect on here with us. And like I said, last week we were on vacation. But hey, when we're on vacation, you should have got caught up if you're Spanish speaking with Noche de Boxeo. They're back with us and doing a hell of a job. If you haven't had a chance, man, okay, I'm going to say it again. If you haven't had a chance, go pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. You're going to get some good read out of it. We keep it traditional. Boxing here. Gabriel Montoya did a fantastic feature article about the whole, you know, chaos between Bob Arum and Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Hey, it was like pulling teeth to get Gabriel to write this up, man. But it came out an excellent piece. It's called The Controlled Cruelty. So you got to go out there and check it out. Again, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. It's only $1.99 too, man. You can't beat that. Fight fans, you got to support your sport. A lot of you guys keep crying about, well, I want to see this guy fight, and I want to see that guy fight. And like my co-host always says, well, are you going to go out and see him fight? If not, shut up. So?
Yes. I'm going out to local fights tomorrow night. I'm going to go check out Daniel Livingston, who will join us later on. And one of our other guests as well, Kid Yamaka, will be fighting, you know, tomorrow night. I can't wait, man. I actually haven't been to a card this year. I've been kind of sequestering myself because I quit smoking and I didn't want to be around people because I might kill them.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I know it's a tough deal. Actually, my friend Blood, he's doing the same thing. Trying to stop smoking here, you know.
I just went cold turkey, man. I know.
That's a
New Year's Eve. It's like it just stopped. Boom. You know, just pushed a button and stopped. I can't really say on the air what that button was, but it was very palpable and it worked. I haven't really had one. Hadn't like not even fooled myself. Not even. But the thing I pride myself on, I haven't turned into like an annoying non-smoker. I'm not like bothered by other smokers. So that was a big fear.
I'm surprised you didn't go back smoking when you saw that little segment on ESPN2 with those two guys trying to argue about boxing when they were both really clueless. You know what I mean? I was like, man, I was like hearing like, you know, fingers running through a chalkboard. If you know, you get these, you know, it's funny that you always hear these particular terms or you know, aliases of particular of people. You know, they either go, oh, you're a Pactard or you're a Flomo and you're this and that. Man, that was a prime example there. Put them on YouTube and stuff where people could really see how a conversation of a Manny Pacquiao fan and a Floyd Mayweather fan would end up, you know, if you put them
in
the same room.
That's very funny. Somebody actually said that to me. They were like, you know, Stephen A. Smith should be the only person that's allowed to talk to Skip Bayless and vice versa. Because they're like equally annoying, you know, just like you guys can handle how annoying each other are. Just, you know, you guys talk about this, but do it in a room where no one can hear.
Exactly. Exactly, man. Exactly. You know. You know. Really quick, I'll bring it up. I just remember that. God, you know what? I can't even bring it up. The name and stuff. Anyways, I got a couple emails about this. Sergio Martinez. Okay. Sergio Martinez chasing after, and I've said it, chasing after the Dragons, which is the smaller guys in the division. And a lot of folks seem to keep believing that Sergio Martinez shouldn't do this, you know. And I was trying to break this down on an email, and a few folks were like, well, can you kind of explain this a little bit more? Because I'm not the greatest person when it comes to typing something up and sending it back to you, man, because I'm literally doing like 3 to 5 different things all the time here. But what I was stating is this, you know, Sergio Martinez, a lot of folks are upset and they keep saying, oh, he's going after the little guys, you know, blah, 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 blah. He should be trying to call out Andre Ward and Carl Froch. And I always go back yeah, he does that, but it really doesn't do anything because if you remember, the same fans that are crying that he's going after the little guy, they're the same ones that are crying saying that Andre Ward and Carl Froch are not superstars of the sport. So Sergio Martinez is still in that same position of not getting really known and not gathering that following. Now, if you look at history too, middleweights or bigger men, okay, have really went after the smaller guys because it's really the small guys. The small guys, I was just reading something that Gabe was texting me right now. The smaller guys have kind of draw that fame. We saw that with Marvelous Marvin Hagler when him and Sugar Ray Leonard went at it. It kind of took him to another spot, even though he retired. But even Bernard Hopkins got in with the smaller guys, what happened there? It became more of a household name. So that's why I kind of sympathize with Sergio Martinez when he's calling out these smaller dudes, because even facing the bigger guys, he's still not going to get in that plateau that he's looking to be standing on. I don't know. I could be wrong. Gabe, what do you think?
I'm sorry. Hang on. I'm dealing with our next guest, Dave. Let me I'll be right back.
Go ahead. I'm going to patch in a fight fan while we're waiting for you. Let's get our buddy here, Rob Regal. Get my soul, brother. How you doing? You're on live right now. I'm leaving the ring.
Oh, hey, you guys. How's it going?
Good, man.
Yeah, y'all can't be taking those Thursdays off, man. I actually have to hang out with my old lady last Thursday, man. That's not cool.
You know what's funny, man? We got a bunch of emails like that where guys were like, yo, man, that's like my getaway time from the old lady, you know? This is the time where I go either in the office or in the garage and open up a couple of cervezas and tune in, and they're like, I literally felt naked. D, you guys weren't on the air for us to hear and listen 3 hours of boxing talk. That's why I apologize, you know. Next time we'll give everybody maybe a 3 month advance notice that we're not going to be on.
Yeah, thanks, guy. I mean, thanks. I was picking out curtains at Walmart, thanks to, you know, to be with it. No, I just want to bring up, I know y'all got this guy coming on, Tavoris Cloud. You know, I'm kind of excited because, you know, he's fighting here in Texas right down the street, like 2 hours from me, so I'm going to,
right.
I should be able to go. It looks like he's trying to make this year I'm hoping he starts barking a little louder, you know, starts getting, going a little harder on these fights, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I always try to bring him up because I know he's inactive, you know what I mean? Try to get his name out there. He's a fighter's fighter, my kind of guy, you know what I mean? Like James Kirkland, you know what I mean? Like those type of dudes.
You know, I hope so too, but I definitely don't want to make, you know what? I don't want to get too excited because, you know, a guy could start off a run in the beginning, which is going to be terrific, Tavoris Cloud, but then he can end up again as a dark cloud just like last year, not doing a whole lot. You know, hopefully they've been able to kind of settle through and realizing they're not going to get those big fights that they're asking for right now, but just keep busy. Like, you know, my partner here was saying, he's just got to stay busy. And that's the thing about fighters nowadays is that they're not taking this understanding is you just got to take fights. No more getting on Twitter and believing that, oh, I got 3,000 to 5,000, even 10,000 followers. I should have negotiation leverage. It doesn't work like that. That's not how boxing works. Regardless of whatever, how many Facebook friends and Twitter friends you got to do where it counts. That's in the ring, not outside of the ring, you know.
Yeah. I know he has a tough fight. I already know much about the guy he's fighting, but when it was discussed with some of y'all experts, y'all talking about it was a tough fight coming up. I mean, Campillo is his name. I think I've seen him fight before, but
yeah, Gabriel Campillo is a really good fighter. I got to tell you, I actually when they announced it, I actually really liked that fight. Campillo has improved. He's an intelligent guy. He's a big, strong guy. But I don't know how well he's going to do against Cloud. I got to be honest. You know, Tavares Cloud is a big, gritty type of dude. He's going to put his mask on the guy, and he's going to end up bringing those heavy hands that Campillo may be over a little overwhelmed. I'm not sure if I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Has there been anybody out there that Campillo has been able to face that can make comparisons and go like, okay, I can handle this style of boxing that Tavares Cloud is going to bring? I don't think so. You know, I think there's going to be some difficulty there for some time for Cloud, but I think that chopping away at the wood, that he's going to chop away just enough. It's going to slow down Gabriel, and Gabriel's going to be in a lot of trouble, man, in those late rounds. Gabriel, you there, brother? No, he's not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all I want to bring up real quick. You know, I like putting his name out there because I know he's inactive. That's another reason I'm kind of worried. I'm like, they're saying this guy's a beast that he's fighting, and he's gotten better. And I don't know what's going on with Don King, but he's not, you know, fighting these guys at all. You know what I mean? They're just like, you know, once or twice a year when he should be, you know, was he ranked number one most of the place, most of the belts? But,
yeah, pretty much with everybody. You know, with Don King, it's just that, you know, Don King is more on tours now than being a promoter. You know, the guy is like, look, I'm a Hall of Famer. I did my dues. That's just the shitty part about fighters that do sign with them. They kind of get shelved up for a while, you know. But I like to see, like you said, want to see Cloud, love to hear about him, and like the fact that there's fight fans that really do acknowledge a guy that is a fighter, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's really, I just want to ask about, you know what I mean? I'm pretty excited once they find out, you know, I'm pretty excited about the whole, you know, card going, being down there in Corpus, but then when they went with Ariel on there, but then when they said Tavares Cloud, that's why I was like, definitely got to try to get there. But yeah, I appreciate the call, you know, that's I like fighters, you know, like Cloud, like Kirkland, you know, those kind of guys,
yeah.
You know. Those, so I appreciate the time,
guys. Hey, man, thank you for the call. I'm sorry I was kind of gone during I was listening, though. It's, you know, well done, and I agree with you, man. We need more action fighters. We need an army of Clouds and Kirklands to save us from the Ugases of the world.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Yo, have a good night, and man,
you, man.
You lucky, man. I love you. I don't like MMA, but I love Gina Carano.
I know.
God bless, Rob.
I don't know if you know this, but I was actually the chair. Nobody figured that out, dog. Nobody knew that. You know.
We actually thank you for mentioning. We put up a new edit. It's on my Facebook. My brother Dan edited it. I'm really proud of him. He's learning how to be an editor. We put up a whole new edit. It's much better. Different credits and a great ending to it. So check it out.
Definitely, guys. Y'all have a good night.
Hey, you too. Bye,
man.
Very much.
Later.
You know, really quick too. We're gonna get rid of the old Leaving the Ring website. It was on the Jumalia template. Got tired of it, man. So we ended up going with a WordPress, and now it's gonna be a lot easier to just type in. It's gonna be leavingtheringradio.com. No more of that leave and then, you know, dash leave that. I got rid of all of that, so it just makes it a lot easier, and it should be a little bit more fun. We're going to be able to put a little bit more stuff on the Leaving the Ring site, so be sure to check it out. It's not completed yet. I'm doing it, so you got to be patient with me, man. I'm not the most technical dude when it comes to doing computer stuff, but I'm trying to figure it out. Trying to figure it out, boxing heads, you know, trying to do my thing here and stuff, you know. So Joel Diaz Jr. is in his weigh-in right now, so we're waiting on him, right?
Actually, Zachary is calling in now, Zachary Woolman, and they're all weigh-in. Yeah, I think Joel was just about to get on the scale, so Zach's apparently calling in. I don't know if Dave Chim's got him yet, and then Joel will come in right after.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. I actually don't see anybody up on that switchboard that's going to tell us Zachary's on or not.
I got this.
You got this? Okay. Dave Chen, too, is actually letting me know about almost a similar opponent that Gabriel Campillo was able to face and stuff. Let me get Dave on. He's got some good points here. Dave, you there?
What's going on, man?
What's up, brother? Hey, throw out the name right now that you were talking about.
I think this was, like,
this
January
is Dave,
last year.
And our producer. Guys, too, just to make sure. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, remember Gabriel Campillo? He fought Babu Shumanov, and it was a big deal because Shumanov was this huge prospect, and he was going to get a title fight, and I think he had something like 10 fights at the time, something small number like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
11, yeah.
Yeah, and then Campillo just like counterpunched the hell out of him, but then didn't get the decision. It wasn't even close at all. I think they just straight up robbed him. That's just my opinion, though.
And Shimon Bey is a big dude, too, and I remember that fight. Yeah. Gabriel was actually blocking a lot of those shots, like you were mentioning with me. So, but I don't know, man. I thought Cloud's a lot bigger, a lot stronger. You know, so I don't know. We'll find out. Thanks, Dave. I'm going to put you back on, bro.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the echo.
I know. Was that me? Was that my phone?
I have no idea, but the devil just took over the show for a second there. It needs to stop. I'm still tracking down Mr. Woolman. I will be right back.
Go right ahead. You know, get Zachary Woolman on with us here on Leaving Rings, a prospect. He's out of the wild card. He's under the tutelage of Freddie Roach, so that should be really, really interesting. Make sure that we get him. Let me see. I'm having the publicist right now for Joel Diaz Jr., Mauro Serrano, who's doing a fantastic job. Man, he's taking over. I don't know if you got anybody know about him. This guy's taking over. He's doing Boxing 360, Gary Shaw, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Mario's doing his thing, man. Definitely doing his thing. Well, Gable's waiting. You guys want to call in, and he's trying to find the fighters that are supposed to be on with us.
Yeah,
what's up?
I'm just waiting to hear back. I think it's fun. You know, hopefully Mario gets a kick out of this, but it's as if they, you know, Mayweather and Guerrero have kind of had like a relationship, you know? They kind of campaigned. It's like they kind of went through this whole process. Here's Zachary. And it's all been through the press. It's just a beautiful thing. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead, man. I'm reading a couple things that people are out there tweeting out there for us. As soon as we find out where the fighters are at that we're going to be having on, Mr. David Chen, please check out the switchboard. I see somebody on the call right now, but I don't know who that is before I patch him in. Hey, if you guys want to call in, Fight Fans, 347-215-7598. I did tell you that was going to be a little crazy. Things were going to be a little unorganized because at the same time while we're doing the show, I'm going to be taking off here and there. What do we got, Gabe?
I'm here with Kid Yarmulke, Zachary Woolman. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right.
Yeah, you got it.
A prospect out of the wild card. The guy I've known for quite a little bit, watching you. Darren always told me I'm going to turn pro, just kind of working through my amateur thing, and now you finally made your debut, Fight Night Club, this last year. Zach,
that's right. Say that again?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm here with my co-host, Dave DeWittis.
Hey, Dave.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm still waiting to weigh in for this fight.
Oh, you haven't even weighed in yet?
I'm thirsty.
You sound pretty mellow for a guy. Usually guys are pretty pissed off. What's the process like?
What am I going to do?
What's
the process?
I get up
in the morning. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Zachary, I mean, you're pretty patient. With a guy with that many tattoos, you got to be pretty patient to sit there for somebody to ink you up, man. So I don't think the weigh-in's going to bother you a bit, right?
Yeah, right. Especially on the belly like that. Yikes. Yeah, you got to be able to sit through some stuff. So good. That's a good point. That actually made me more relaxed.
Well, let me ask you, you know, doing something in the belly, that's pretty sensitive, and you got some serious pain that happens there. Is that why you like to get – is that why you're a fighter as well? Because, you know, a lot of fighters say, I enjoy the pain.
I don't know. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You catch a shot, it'll wake you up or get your attention. But I'm a fighter because I love the sport of boxing, and I love just to compete in this sport. And I love the history that it has. I'm a fighter. I'm a boxer. You know, pain's just part of the deal. But, you know, I'm trying to keep my head moving and my legs moving. I get hit too much.
You've got a kind of a whole throwback thing going, if you don't mind my saying. You know, you got the
1930s
something kind of hair. Your style is kind of, you know, almost like a Tony Dale or Raggiano. You're a little bit down, a little tighter, and you like to come forward.
Zach, when you do a fan of the classic fight, you remind me of a classic fighter.
Say that again about a classic fighter?
Are you a fan of the classic fights? Because you remind me.
Sugar Ray Robinson is like my all-time favorite. Jersey Joe Walcott. You know, we can go forward. I love Alexis Arguello, Sugar Ray Leonard, Hagler, Hearn. I mean, I'm just I liked boxing some time ago. But this is the era that I'm in. There's fighters in this era that I like, but definitely a fan of traditional older boxing. And, like, you can go back with, like, Willie Pep. I know that's, you said Tony Dale, right? The older
yeah.
era that you were talking about.
I
don't watch too much Marciano because I don't hit like that. But definitely a fan of all the older guys.
So how did you get started? I mean, you're a young guy. I mean, did you have a long amateur career, or was it something?
No, not at all. I went to a military school when I was 14. I was out on the border of Mexico and Texas, and I was scared because it was an international school. So I was like, I'm a boxer. I was just scared of everyone. They're like, that's great. We have a boxing team. And I was like, oh, shit. So I got started that way. And I started that year, and I won the Golden Gloves in Corpus Christi, and then... I had a bit of a rough road, and when I was 19, I got hooked up with Freddie Roach, and off I go.
Did you immediately think that this was going to be something you wanted to do professionally? I mean, did you understood the commitment?
Immediately.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the commitment. I definitely didn't understand the commitment, but I instantly fell in love with boxing. And, I mean, the first time I ever got in the ring, I'm pretty sure I got busted up. So maybe the guy who was talking about, I think Dave was talking about the pain. He may be right, but I'm not going to admit to that yet.
Yes, but there's something addicting about it. I mean, at the time we met, I was on a long period of training there, like all the time. And I understand, you know, obviously getting my ass kicked in the very beginning as well. I remember you gave me a lesson in how to cut the ring off. Jesse Reed put us in to move around with each other. We weren't throwing anything. I couldn't get away from you. And right then I knew you were very serious about what you were doing. And I watched you put the whole thing together.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. How do you approach each day training? You know, do you look to work on one specific thing? How do you kind of.
I mean, I feel like I'm learning very naturally. And also, you know, I'm with Freddie. I'm with Eric Brown. I'm in training camp with world champions. Like, I mean, whatever's going to come into the play and into the fold and, you know, into my toolbox, it's going to come pretty naturally because I'm a boxer puncher. Freddie knows that. Eric knows that. You know, you don't try and change a fighter. You work on their skills and their assets, and obviously
sure.
you work on their weaknesses. And, I mean, I'm really learning on the job. You know, I had 20 amateur fights. So I won the Golden Gloves in Los Angeles, like, you know, a year or two, 2 years ago. I'm learning on the job.
Would that really solidify for you that, okay, I can do this, is winning the Golden Gloves?
I mean, in all honesty, it was, I did well in the amateurs. I didn't even take many losses, but the goal was you're going to be a professional boxer. I think what solidified it was when in the second round of my pro debut, I got hit with a right hand, and it hit me right on the chin. I took the shot, and I continued to fire back. I think that's when it solidified for me.
Wow.
Because the reality is, or my reality was, I've never done this with, 10-ounce gloves and no headgear.
Sure.
You know? So, and you know, the only thing, yes, I know I can box, and, you
but
know,
can
I can go
be
but
yeah.
can I take the shot? So the second I got caught with one, and it was right on the chin by a guy who could punch a little bit, I said, here we go.
I can do this.
Right.
You know?
And I can do it, and I can handle it in a cool and calm manner and get right back on the jab and get right back to boxing and get right back to the game plan because, you know, they say in boxing, once you get hit, everything goes out the window.
Right.
that's not the case.
You just kind of, was it just a blink and then you kept moving?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I even realized it. I can't think
of the moment that you're talking about. I watched the fight,
It's very quick. The moment is very quick. And actually, the second I get hit is the second I start to relax because I know I can do it.
Is that really the key? Is slowing the game down for yourself and mentally? That's
right. I mean, that was my truth. I you know, I'm sure every fighter has a different way of viewing it. Some guys go in there thinking, I'm going to tear this guy's head off. I go in there thinking, I'm going to box. And I'm going to continue boxing until this fight's over. And if, you know, if a knockdown comes and as the case was the last fight where that guy's never been dropped before, I said, okay, I got a little bit of power, but that comes from setting things up and doing clean, nice work boxing.
You know, a lot of fighters will say that. I just box. You know, what is it that to mean to you? We get a mental image of a guy moving around and like a Sugar Ray Leonard, and maybe I was
absolutely.
Gonna, I appreciate him, but I always thought he was a bit of a runner. I'm a Hagler guy.
I'm a Robinson guy.
Interesting. So, what does it mean to you to box?
That means to stay on the jab. It's my favorite punch. It's probably my best punch. Stay on the jab, hands up. You know, if you have to let your hands down to bring the guy out of his guard, okay. But stay sharp. My advantage, and I box with world champions, and I have a skill boxing. So, I mean, know where your money is, so to speak. So that's what it means to me is to stay smart. Don't turn it into a dogfight. Even if he wants to dogfight, you're the boxer. You brought your brain.
Is it about rhythm, too, kind of finding the rhythm to fight?
And find your rhythm and work nice. And I think when I say box, it means work smart. Because I come from a great pedigree coming from Wildcard. I don't need to get into a dogfight with the training I have.
Right.
And, you know, it's called boxing, and boxers box.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the way I look at that.
What do you know about this guy you're fighting?
I've sparred with him like a year and a half ago. I know he's right-handed, and I know that he lost his pro debut to the guy I beat in the Golden Gloves finals, which I have to say means absolutely nothing because there's a total difference between amateurs and pros.
Yeah. It could be not even
absolutely, yeah.
You don't even know
right.
Who.
So, I know that he's been beat before, and I know that I can fight.
Let me ask you this, because you mentioned that it was Freddie Roach. Now, you know, we hear a lot of this, but how much is Freddie Roach involved in your training?
Every day, except for when he flies out.
Okay.
And, like, I get that was a great question that you asked because everyone thinks they're with Freddie. And also,
right.
I'm going to be honest. Everyone thinks they're with Freddie, and you got a guy who was an amateur who just made his pro debut. But the reality is if you guys saw my pro debut, he's in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he's not going there for fun. And Eric can certainly handle the job on his own, and I listened and loved them both the same. But he's going because I'm his fighter.
Are they as thorough with you as they are with the Pacquiao in terms of, I don't know if you work with Ariza or have a strength coach, but I mean, you always
I have a strength coach, but it's a different team.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
You always seem like, you know, in good shape. You know, I don't think I've ever seen you blown up or ever seen you moving forward in your conditioning. But do you guys break down tape and go through that whole process?
Yeah,
or?
I mean, with this guy, we couldn't get the tape on him. We tried. And then, you know, it was like a week and a half before the fight. And so we let the tape go because I don't want to spend, you know, a week and a half before a fight harping on some guy's fight tape. It's just, I don't feel like that's an appropriate place to, you know, place to put my mind, so to speak.
Right.
So at this point, it's just, Zach, you know you can box. You've been in with him before. He left Wildcard about a year and a half ago, but I can only assume he's gotten better. The really nice thing is I've definitely gotten much better in a year and a half.
Nice.
Well, man, we wish you all the luck, brother. And, you know,
thank
hopefully
you so
we
much.
Get to
thank
see
you
live.
Thank you for taking me for the interview.
Oh,
hey,
our pleasure,
no
dude.
Problem, Zachary.
No problem.
Have a good
night,
man.
Thank you so much. And hopefully I'll see you guys at the fight, and we'll be interviewing again soon.
Cool. All right, man.
All right, brother.
Take care.
You take care.
Bye.
I believe we already have our next guest, Soel Diaz, on with us. Dave, can you patch him in for us, please?
Oh, we do. Cool.
Jeez. Joel, are you there, brother? Now, I can't physically see if he's on the switchboard. I don't know if he hung up or if he's still on hold and stuff. Because I'm actually driving now.
Dave,
I'm heading out.
Dropped off real quick. I'll let you know when he's back on though.
Okay,
I think
beautiful.
He's calling me. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Right.
If Gabe, you could patch him in, that'd be great. Because I'm not on the switchboard to let everybody know. I'm on the way, on my way to the airport now, so that I can get on my flight and head out, so I can go see the show, showbox fights. So I apologize if the quality of what we're producing out there right now is not.
We've done this before. Remember, I'm heading to Fight Night Club. It's just going to be a little more of an adventure from here on, because we also got Dr. Margaret Goodman, like in 20 minutes, coming on to discuss, the voluntary anti-doping association. While Dave's trying to get to Vegas, this is what it's all about. This is Horatio Alger. I'm excited.
Yep.
Website,
no.
Porn sites are getting taken down. Mega upload is gone. But we're on our cell phones doing a radio show about boxing for 3 hours. I mean, we're living the dream, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, we're living the dream and stuff, man. Hopefully I don't wreck on the way of living the dream here.
Yeah,
it's raining.
It's a nightmare.
it is raining and stuff, and I can't text Mario or anything like that to let him know that we're ready and, and we apologize.
We're both texting. We're texting everybody. I'm gonna call in, Joel. I'll be right back. Just start talking.
My fans, if you want to call in right now, 347-215-7598, give us your prediction, what you think is going to happen this Friday night on Showbox, who you're picking. What was that, Gabe?
I'm just trying to get people. I'll be right back.
Go ahead. Again, 347-215-7598. Mr. David Chen will patch you in and let us know that you're on the line, because I physically cannot see the switchboard right now because I am driving and trying to stay alive here, man. I don't wreck. It's raining and stuff, so I apologize. Like I said, it was going to get a little crazy here on leaving in the ring. Now, I know a lot of folks want to continue talking about Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. I don't know if there's any more to even talk about, discuss, don't really care about it. I heard that Showtime is trying to set up that Carl Froch and Lucian Bute. I don't know what a lot of folks are thinking about that fight there. I don't have a big, huge problem with it, but I think the only thing that I'm waiting for is what's going to happen with Ward with his rehab recovery. Does he get the fight with the winner? I mean, here's the thing that I was thinking, okay? He gets Carl Froch, Bute, and let's be honest here. Bute has not fought the stiffest competition out there. Now, no matter what you think of the Cobra, if you look at his career, the guy's improved. He's improved in the boxing department. He's improved with the jabbing. He's improved with a lot of things right now. There may be a possibility that with the soft touch that Bute has been putting himself across in the ring, he may or may not be upsetting. And, I was talking to a few folks about the whole Carl Froch and Andre Ward, and you get a lot of folks that say, I'm not a Ward fan, he's boring, and I'm not into his style. But I always go back and go, yeah, but the reason I think I'm fascinated with him, the reason I think that I'm really rooting for the guy or watching what he's doing is because at one time, here was an Olympian that wasn't taking the best oppositions. And when the Super Six was announced, when it was formatted by Showtime, nobody, there was only a very selective few that were picking Ward to have some success in this tournament. And he dominated. He ends up dominating in this tournament. He ends up really making a lot of guys that were more the veterans look like the amateurs. Ward really stepped in looking like he was the more veteran guy fighting in the ring. And he made it that easy. And that's the funny thing sometimes with boxing fans where, they complain. You complain that this guy's not fighting this person. You want to see him fight that person. But then when they end up doing it and they make it look that easy, he's boring. He's this and this and that. I think that a lot of us forget, and we kind of dismiss the accomplishments sometimes that some of these fighters have. Now, same thing with Carl Froch. I think a lot of folks kind of dismissed what he's kind of accomplished. And when the whole thing going back with Carl Froch, with him, with Andre Ward, I was like, I honestly really think that Froch lost the fight before they even he even stepped in the ring with in Atlantic City with Andre Ward. For some reason, I kind of got the sense that he was already beaten in the mentality before he decided to mix it up with Andre Ward. I don't know if I got my partner on with me. I'd like to hear his point of what he thinks. But I think that some folks that are kind of undermining if the fight happens between Froch and Butte, it might be an upset special, or it might cause a, you know, a minor setback if Froch, like I mentioned, has improved, and if he comes in not fearing Butte the way he feared Ward. I think that he lost the fight more on the mental department rather on the physical department. Gabe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for our guest to call in. Here we go. Hang on 1 second.
Anyway, fight
fans. Mario?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, I got Danielle here. Hold on.
All right.
Hello.
We're all merged in. Dave, can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
On, Gabe.
What's up, Danielle? Have you had your way in yet?
No, we're about to do it right now.
Oh, all right. We're here with Danielle Livingston. This is a middleweight fight, right?
Yes.
All right, so middleweight prospect, Danielle Livingston. Welcome to the show, Danielle. How are you?
Thank you. Fine, yourself?
Doing good, man.
Right now I'm just being a little puzzled. You're talking to Danielle like we don't even know him.
you gotta introduce him. You know, you gotta do it for the people that are tuning in.
We gotta give him the proper announcement here. You know, Danielle Livingston, who still hasn't had a nickname yet. You know, the man, the middleweight with no name at the moment. How about that, there, Danielle?
That'll work.
Ooh, I like that.
Hey,
man with no name. It's kind of scary, you know?
It is, huh? It is.
Yeah.
The man with no name, Livingston. I wouldn't want to fight somebody like that. I'd be like, what do you mean he got no name?
And then you come into, like, you know, the theme song from, like, for a few dollars more, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I like that.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, so you know what? I got to applaud you, brother. You're keeping yourself busy. You definitely are sticking to your word of saying I'm gonna be consistent. I'm not gonna do what other fighters have been doing, which is being sporadic and not being spontaneous. To me, you're being spontaneous. You're taking the fights that are offered to you, and you're not being, you know, icky picky. You're just saying, look, I want to fight. I got to get in there, so let's do it.
Absolutely. You know, my job as a fighter is to, you know, train and be prepared for whoever is in front of me. You know, we all have a position in this thing. You know, my promoter, Boxing 360 Mario, his job is to do as he's been doing since we've been together, is to put guys in front of me, keep me busy, and, you know, as long as he do his part and I do my part, you know, 2 and 2 equals 4 all the time.
Let me ask you something really quick, though, man, because you're up in age there. In your career, you know, you turned pro a little late in the career, you know, in your career. That was the decision that you made. How's your body acting? I mean, because this kind of pace sometimes can be a little bit of a torture for somebody of, now I'm not saying that you're an old guy, but in boxing, you're an old guy.
Right. You know, if I had been getting beat up, you know, or had been getting the wear and tear on my body, you know, throughout my boxing career, then, you know, absolutely it'd take a big wear and tear on my career, you know, especially
right.
As you're saying, being a little older. You know, however, I've been very fortunate, been very blessed in a sport where I have not taken any punishment. You know, I'm a boxer puncher. My thing is to swim without getting wet. So I figure as long as I could, you know, dinner and do what I have to do and concentrate on Danielle, you know, we should have a long career, whether it's, you know, starting at a later age or, you know, early age.
You had a previous opponent, and now turns out you're fighting Michael Walker. He's got a resume of guys that he's lost to, you know, Billy Lyle, Matt Korobov, Mayorga, Andy Lee, you know, among others, but he But it's not always the, you know, the guy loses. It's how he loses. And he's given a lot of these guys trouble. Danny Jacobs, he troubled. Mayorga, he took 9. Andy Lee, he took 8. Are you excited to be in the ring with somebody with this kind of experience?
I mean, absolutely. You know, you said it best, Gabe. You know, he don't have a winning record, you know. But it's not about how many losses you have. It's how have you lost, you know. Who are the guys that you've lost to? You know, I made a mistake trying to judge a fighter on their record and came up on a draw in my career, you know. So, you know, it's not about, you know, how many times you're fighting and lost. You know, at the end of the day, this is another fighter. You know, he's been in there with, you know, greater competition than I have in the pro. You know, and that's something that we have to respect. You know, like you said, Danny Jacobs, Andy Lee, Mayorga. These are guys that are definitely, you put it on a professional scale, they have a better professional resume than I do. So, you know, you got to take that into account. We can't afford to get in there and be lazy. We can't afford to get in there and say, oh, well, he lost to this guy. You know, keeping in mind that I have never even faced the guys that he lost to. So, you know, we just got to respect that we're 120% ready. We hope he's 120% ready because we got to get out there and do what we have to do.
This is a guy that can not only, you know, upset you or take you, but worse, he can make you look bad. You know, he's got power, you know, ability to punch a little bit, or at least stun you. But he's more of like a volume guy that crowds you, ties you up, and kind of tries to extend the fight. How did you prepare for that stuff? I mean, one thing to, you know, throw like punches and combinations, but do you prepare for guys tying you up? Do you work on that?
I mean, you know, it all comes with experience and you know, technique. You know, I can't really sit back and worry about what he's good at. You know, I can't worry about, you know, his game plan. You know, our whole concern is to continue to do Don Yale. You know, continue to work on team lift. You know, establish our jab. You know, continue to put our punch together. Continue to get back to what had us once at the top in the amateurs. You know, so everything, you know, I've been fortunate enough with my amateur experience to face almost every style that they have out there. So, you know, like I said, it goes back to experience. You know, we just got to get out there, you know, continue to focus on Danielle and continue to use each obstacle as a learning experience as we continue to chop down and stay hungry.
These other guys, like Danny Jacobs took him long, you know, Matt Korobov surprisingly took him out in like one. And who knows what, you know, I mean, it could be either Korobov's just coming to his own or, you know, Michael Walker had an off camp, whatever, you know, or just, you know, one of those fights. But there's a bar here, you know, that's set by these guys. Do you want to be in the club that gets extended, or do you want to be in the club that takes the guy out?
Well, you know, I want to be in a winning club, period, you know,
yeah.
by any means necessary. If the knockout comes, it comes. If we go to the distance, I'm going to make sure I'm being pretty going to distance. You know, like I said, you know, my whole objective is to get back on top to where I feel that I should be. Once again, I want to mention, I'm not overlooking anyone. You know,
right.
I'm not the type that call no one out. But at the same time, yes, you have 30 professional fights. I don't know much about your amateur background, but this is something I've been doing for 17 years, you know.
Right.
So, you know, we just, by any means necessary, we just want to get back in that position where we ring your head, we ring your phone, we're making people turn on their TV in the professional world.
You're like the nicest guy with a chip on his shoulder that I've ever met, you know? I appreciate that, you know? It makes you work hard, you know? But you're not, you know, you're not mad at anybody. You're like you say, you're kind of just, I'm getting back to where I should be. Where you want to be. I love that about your story, man. I wish you well in the fight. We're kind of up against it, and we got to grab another one of your guys, Joel Diaz Jr., before Margaret Goodman comes on. But I wish you all the luck, man, and hopefully you're as busy this year as you were last year, and you get where you're going and where you want to be.
I I appreciate it, guys. I appreciate the help. I appreciate the support. Because, you know, at the end of the day, when you really look at it, we as fighters are fighters, but we're nothing without the fans or the supporters. You know, if it wasn't for you guys putting us out there, you know, if it wasn't for the fans saying, hey, I would like to see so-and-so fight so-and-so, then that fight would never be made, you know. So I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys taking the time out to, you know, basically help me in my career, and I'm definitely grateful.
Cool. Hey, I'll see you there.
Absolutely. You guys have a good evening.
All right, man.
You too, brother.
Bye. Don L. Livingston, man, I got to say, love his story. Like the fact that hungry for success, man, is what he really goes by when he's mentioned. If you follow him on Twitter or Facebook, I like the fact that he's a fighter that's humble and at the same time knows where he needs to go and knows that he's not yet, but he's willing to put in the work that he has to do in order to have that success. And the mentality of hungry for success, that might be the nickname that he should be rolling with, you know, Donnell, hungry for success, Livingston, you know. I don't know if we have our next guest on with us yet. Like I said,
Joel Diaz, I think his phone died. And so I'm going to try to patch in Marco Goodman, and we'll proceed with that interview, and then we'll come back.
Okay, sounds
we'll,
great,
man. We'll try to get Joel later on in the show. So give me a second, and I'll be back.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 to get Marguerite Goodman. Talk about the VADA testing that they're obviously working on and trying to get out there. I know a lot of fight fans are not really understanding what the whole VADA testing is about. So definitely we're going to ask the questions so we can be a little bit more educated about the testing that they want to conduct with the Berto and Ortiz. Not even with just that, but bringing the whole battle testing into the sport and combat world to really try to help clean out and not clean up the sport. I mean, obviously that's what they want to do is clean up the sport, but at the same time, really educate the fighters that are really putting a lot of harm to their bodies by taking particular substance that they're unaware of because they're not getting the proper guidance to move forward and take these type of things, you know, these vitamins or substance in their body. So it's going to be really good to hear Mark. We did interview her a while back, but it didn't record. So this is pretty much we're just going to be going back and touching up what we had spoke about. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, I think it's good, actually. It was kind of a nice test run at an interview. We talked for a long time, like 45 minutes. It's a long time for us to have not recorded it, but that's just the way it goes.
It was like 33, nice 33 to 35 minutes, you know?
just gone into the ethos. She says she's ready. I'm going to call her in, and I'll be right back.
Okay, go right ahead. Fight fans, like I said, we're going to have Margaret Goodman, who's is one of the founders of the VADA testing. So it'll be really good to hear from her if you guys want to tune in and stay on. I apologize again if the quality is poor. I'm driving, trying to get to the airport here, but I didn't want to make the show short because we were off last week. So we're trying to make up for the lost time that we had last week for leaving the ring and do some catch up here. So at the same time, I'm trying to drive safe, be on the radio show, talk boxing here. That's what we do on Leaving in the Ring. And if anybody wants to call in and kind of just pick up what I was talking about Butte and Frotch, am I crazy thinking that? I don't know. You tell me, man. Am I crazy thinking that could be a really strong possibility that if Butte takes on this fight here, it can really interrupt the party between him and Andre Ward to find out who is the number one guy at 168? Because I'm not sure, really honestly, I'm not really sure if anybody wants to see a rematch between Frotch and Ward, you know. But it really depends, and if we do see a Frotch with a little bit more motivation this time, you know, now that he knows what he got himself into when he fought Andre Ward the first time for that Super 6 finale here. Anyways, we're waiting for Gable to click on over and let me know if we have our next guest. Gabe, you there?
And
yes.
Perfect timing. We're here with Dr. Margaret Goodman. Give me your official title. She's with the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Margaret. How are you doing?
Official title there. Oh, sorry, Dave.
I guess as far as VADA is concerned, president of VADA and chairman of the board that we have.
Well, I'm here with my co-host, Dave DeWennis. You remember him from the conversation that got lost in the ethos that we did before.
Yes, of course, poor guy.
Well, let's start. I'll start. Take us back. You know, there's so much history here, but it's kind of a short history of PEDs and testing in boxing. Take us back to maybe 2001 or really the beginning of your journey and really in Nevada also beginning the drug testing. How did that start for you?
Right. No, it's funny because I was trying to ask Dr. Hobamsky, who was the chief physician for the Nevada Commission for over 25 years and was a commissioner. And he came on the Athletic Commission in Nevada in, probably like the late 1980s. And they were already conducting drug testing for stimulants and narcotics. But PED testing, as far as looking at anabolic steroids, was really never brought up until around 2001. And I think, looking back, I can't remember if it was Bota, the former heavyweight, I can't remember, someone like that had tested positive overseas. And it came up that, you know, why weren't we doing testing in the United States? And Dr. Hlemanski was the first one to propose that, and that was adopted by the Nevada Athletic Commission around 2001, 2002, and has obviously evolved since. There's very few athletic commissions that perform any kind of drug testing in the United States, let alone for anabolic steroids or other performance-enhancing agents. But truth be told, Nevada was the first, and it was all from Dr. Hlemanski.
Was there resistance in the beginning? What was the education process like? I mean, we think of, when we look back, and it seems like so obvious that in the 80s and 90s that people were juicing. I mean, you look at, like, I hate to call people out, but, like, you know, movie stars like Stallone and Schwarzenegger just, like, blown up and totally ripped, you know, the cuts really deep that significant, you know, with or synonymous with, like, anabolic use. But it was normal. Everybody was fine that Rocky, our fantasy boxer, like, juiced and fought a giant Russian who was juicing as well.
I know. You're right. And it started that way. You know, it's funny that the Athletic Commission itself really had to be educated. I don't remember which commissioners were there at the time, but none of them really thought there was a need. And at the time, and still, wrestling, professional wrestling, like WWE, and back then it was WWF, and some other smaller groups, had fight cards here, if you want to call them that, or shows. And we would work those. Those were licensed through the state of Nevada, more for the idea of collecting tax money for the state. But they were licensed. And so I remember at the hearings of the Athletic Commission, everyone was like, well, what's the point of doing steroid testing? It's only going to be the heavyweights, if anyone. And so Dr. Hlemanski really had to educate the Athletic Commission. And what we did, and really the way everything is handled and was handled, even when we instituted MRI testing, is you do it on a step-by-step process. Because any kind of change in the regulations or rules, you really want to do it slowly so that you do educate the participants. And so they started a program, I can't remember how long it lasted, maybe for a couple of months, where athletes would be tested randomly. And by randomly, I mean it would be for a championship fight. They wouldn't do everyone, but it would be definitely for a championship situation. And the fighters initially, maybe for the first month or so, weren't penalized if to have come up positive. And they all received letters and education on what the program was going to do. And little by little, it was instituted. And you know, there's only a few athletic commissions in the country that do any kind of testing, real testing for PEDs. You know, New York does, New Jersey has for some time, California has adopted it as well. I know Pennsylvania is doing some, and Ohio. But there are still very few commissions, and very few of them do anything that's – well, actually, none of them do anything that's that pervasive that includes all the different substances that really need to be looked at, including EPO, erythropoietin. And nobody really does random, unannounced testing, which is a real significant problem. So it's an evolving process, but sadly enough, through all these years since 2001, not much has changed, unfortunately.
I'm not sure if I still have Dave. Dave, are you there? All right, well, I'm going to have to we're just gonna have to keep talking.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I had it on mute.
Oh, you are back.
I'm driving stuff. Yeah.
You know, Mark, I know we touched on this, you know, but obviously now that it's live. But let's talk a little bit. We talked about the funding, and we can you explain to us how long do you think that's going to work out for? Because obviously you guys are not going to be – you can't charge the fighters that can't afford this type of testing. So how do you continue foregoing something like this without running out with the support that you're getting at the moment?
Well, you know, that's obviously a good point. And I'm hoping that as time goes on that we'll get more financial support. I think, as I mentioned to you the last time, there's different individuals, private individuals, in all kinds of various walks of life, even in the entertainment industry, that are really interested in helping this program. So I'm hoping that there will be a significant amount of donations that will help us go continue so that we can test some of the newer fighters that are coming along that don't make the big purses that maybe make, you know, I mean, I remember fighters were only making $100 a round when I first started doing club shows.
Right.
It's probably not that much different. So, you know, I want it to be available for those guys, too, not just the higher profile guys that can pay for it or their promoters or that have the big time promoters that can pay for it. You know, I know people like Lou DiBella, and I know Golden Boy, especially when it came down to the Berto Ortiz fight, were both very willing to pay. And, you know, so that's a different story. But I do agree with you. The only way that this will really survive is that we do generate interest. And that's another reason why I appreciate you putting this on your show and hopefully just getting the word out. You know, I was talking to someone about that today, that we really need to let people know more about this so that hopefully it will generate more interest.
Now, you know, when we talk about letting people more or less know about this here, one of the things that honestly raises eyebrows is that because there's been so much in the sport in the past right now between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao of the accusations, that some fans are kind of misled about the VADA testing by somebody accepting to take the test or asking them to take that test. It's almost saying like they're admitting that they might have been doping or something. How do we kind of lighten that up where that dark cloud kind of goes away?
You know, I agree with you. I mean, I think that's a problem, and that's one thing that I'm really against is this being like somebody calling somebody else out. You know, the one thing that I think that, if anything, this is particularly different as compared to the Mayweather situation where Mayweather has, you know, totally volunteered to take the test but is essentially demanding that his opponents take the test. If this is a voluntary program, and we want to keep it that way so that it doesn't depend on the opponent coming to us. The individual fighter can come to us and say, you know, I'm out there, and I think, you know, Andre Berto is a good example of this, that somebody that's been through the Olympic system, you know, understands the process, understands what it's like to get tested on a frequent basis and randomly and unannounced testing, that this is a way that they can stand up for their sport and say, you know, we have a commitment, I have a commitment to clean sport, and I'm willing to demonstrate that, as opposed to the attitude of calling somebody out saying, you know, I think you're dirty, you better go do this. That is certainly not what we're about. You know, obviously we want to promote clean sport and we want to prevent cheating, and I would hope that anybody that would come to us, especially with a degree of testing that we're doing, the extensive amount of testing that we're doing as far as all the different substances, that, you know, we wouldn't get a dirty fighter. But with that said, you know, it's important that the athletes themselves are coming with the right attitude, and that's why they have to apply to us. You know, they have to apply. We have an application that they have to fill out. We have to know what they're about, why they want to do this. And, you know, hopefully for those particular athletes, the program will be funded because they're doing it for the right reasons.
Is the program set up so that you could do like a 365 Well, you know, that's always the thing is, you know, like Victor has said,
yeah.
Conte has said to me, because I always push for the whole package, you know, and he said, no, you know, a half a loaf of bread is still, you know, better than no bread at all. And I love that saying, but I still want the 365. Don't you think a fighter could sign up and maybe get sponsored by Gatorade or something?
No, I agree with you. I totally agree with you, but here's the situation, and I'll tell you there was the main reason why we didn't opt to do that, because initially I was just like you. I thought that that was really the way to do it, and not because the testing would be done more often over that period of the 365 days, but I really felt, I agree with you, that that's probably the right thing to do. But here's the situation. When you institute a program like this, you know, you want to do it to the max. You want to do it the right way. And one thing that's really important is that there are repercussions, that there are potential sanctions and something that will happen if somebody tests positive. Athletes and boxers and MMA fighters we're talking about right now, is they travel to all these different jurisdictions. Yes, when someone gets a license in the state of Nevada, they have that license, or in the state of New York, and technically those states could do something as far as delivering sanctions if somebody was found to be positive, but it is much more difficult to do so. So one thing, when we were, you know, obviously we wanted to do this the state of the art to equal an Olympic-type program, and when we started working with, like, the UCLA anti-doping lab, that's one of the few WADA-accredited labs in the world, everyone wanted to know what will be the sanctions. So the easiest way for us to do this was when a fighter had actually signed for a fight that was going to be in a specific commission, you know, held in a specific jurisdiction, excuse me, so that if they were to test positive, what's going to happen? So basically, with our particular program, if somebody tests positive, you know, it's I think these guys started about 7 or 7.5 weeks before their fight. These results immediately go to the Athletic Commission. They also go to Fight Facts, which is the designated record keeper for the Association of Boxing Commissions, and that there will be something that can happen. In other words, if somebody tests positive and that's confirmed, obviously, then the Athletic Commission will be the burden on the Athletic Commission to do something about it. Now, you could say, well, the Athletic Commission could decide not to, but I think that that's unlikely. I really do. And it'll also be listed on the federal suspension list that this athlete, not only in the instance that they've tested positive, will also list that they've tested negative. So, I mean, that's another thing. We wanted the fighters to reap the benefits of being negative as well as, you know, God forbid, being positive and having the repercussions of that. So that was really why we tied it to a fight, because we wanted to make sure that something would happen. And, you know, that's another thing. When I spoke to some of the experts at WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, they wanted to know that as well. So that was something that was very important, and that was the way we kind of came up with it. But I totally agree with you. It would be better to do it 365 days a year.
Yeah, definitely. How many fighters, let me ask you this, Margaret, how many fighters do you think that are really not aware of what they're putting in their body? So when somebody calls them a cheater, it's the fighter is in truth saying, I'm not a cheater, but then later finds out that they had something in their body. It was not supposed to be there. How many times does that happen in our sport? Do you know?
You know, I think when I was with the Athletic Commission in Nevada and worked with the Association of Boxing Commissions, I think every time somebody would test positive, that would be the primary, you know, thing out of their mouth. Whether that was true or not, I can't tell you, and that's a sad thing. But that's another thing that VADA wants to really accomplish, and that's one thing that we're trying to do on our website and through Twitter, et cetera, is to eventually reach out to the fighters and their trainers to educate them on what kind of harmful things and what kind of things are illegal that they could be putting in their body. You know, I think we've talked about this before the last time, before the show unfortunately disappeared, that too often these guys don't pay attention. You know, it's the mentality, which isn't a bad one. It's just the way of the world. You know, boxers start at such a young age. They've got, you know, a father figure of their trainer most often, and
right.
They become, you know, they just don't pay attention to these things. I mean, you see it financially all over and over again, that they don't know how to properly handle their finances. And when they start making money, it, you know, all goes to, excuse my language, hell in a handbasket. So I think that this is another thing that's just a part of it. You know, years ago, back in about 2001, also, Dr. Homansky and I put together a book called Ringside and Training Principles. And we had a whole bunch of experts in the sport, like Teddy Atlas, Emmanuel Stewart, a whole bunch of people, even Shane Mosley at the time. We had a lot of Ray Leonard. We had people write a chapter in that book about different things that they had expertise on. And the purpose of it was to educate the fighters. And what we did with the book is, you know, we got donations for it, and we gave one to every single fighter and trainer that came through the state of Nevada and anybody that requested one. And we ended up giving out about 5,000 books in about 2 years. And in that book, there was also things on the legal aspects. What did they need to know when they signed a contract? How many of these boxers sign TV contracts and they don't even know what they're signing? You know, they don't have anybody really explain this to them. And it's the same thing with what they put in their body, and it's the same thing on how to make weight and how to not, you know, come into a fight dehydrated. So that was the whole purpose of that. And this is just kind of a carryover through that. And that's another, you know, aspect of VADA is, you know, you hear all the time, I mean, I could talk more about MMA on this, about difficulty in making weight and people being overweight and coming into a fight, you know, almost passing out because they're lightheaded from dehydration. You know, these guys need to be educated on that too. And so you really need to have somebody to explain it to them. And I think that the mentality has always been that, you know, the trainer wants to protect the kid. He doesn't feel, you know, he wants the kid focused on the fight, on training, blah, blah, blah. Let somebody else take care of all those things for them. They need to start taking care of those things themselves, and then they will feel more responsible for their career. And I think in the end, they'll be more responsible for their future and for their eventual retirement, and also on a financial level. So I think that this is just kind of an example of that. Obviously, this deals with drug testing, but I think it's just a whole education process, and giving the athletes enough credit to let them handle these things themselves, that will make them a better fighter.
Let me ask you, what are some of the things that VADA is willing to offer? Are they willing to offer, like, seminars, a seminar for fighters to come in to be educated about what to take or what damages that they're taking that could do harm to their body? And if so, because we have a lot of fighters right now that do listen to our show, what are some of the things that these fighters that are just not being aware and not being careful and really putting a little bit too much trust with the surroundings that they're with right now, what are some of the things that they can damage? You know, what could in the long run, not now, because a lot of them are actually, they're benefiting out of the perks, but down the line, what could really happen to their bodies?
Well, and let's say we're not even talking about performance-enhancing drugs. Let's just say we're talking about making weight, you know, showing up to a fight in condition and not destroying yourself in between fights. Obviously, if we're talking about the younger guys and women, they're younger, so they keep in shape. They fight more often, you know, and as fighters go along, they fight less often, so they have a tendency to get out of shape in between fights. I don't think that these guys understand how that rips up their body. It just destroys them. It's hard on their kidneys. It's hard on their muscles. They're breaking down muscles. And they think, you know, they use training camp, you know, before a fight too much as just a fat farm, you know, a way to lose weight. And if they would try, I know this sounds ridiculous because, you know, look, when you look at the amateurs, I've you know, seen all these Golden Glove guys. I used to work the amateurs, and, you know, so much down at that point, the trainers are trying to fit these fighters in weight classes where they don't belong. Their bodies are growing. They're forced to, you know, go through diets when they're only in their teens, and they're destroying their bodies then, and then they end up in this, you know, vicious cycle of gaining weight, losing weight, eating disorders, blah, blah, blah. And I think there's so many fighters that develop eating disorders for absolutely no necessary reason. And it, part of it's because the trainers, and I've talked to many expert trainers that tell me the same thing, that some of these kids are forced to be in the wrong weight class from the beginning, and as their bodies grow, it gets worse and worse. And so what happens is every time they have a fight, yeah, maybe they can compensate for it when they're in their teens and early 20s, but they start getting around 27, 28 years of age, they're going to have more problems. Their training camp is not going to be as good as it was. They're not going to be able to lose the weight like they used to, and their diet's going to go up and down like a yo-yo. Their metabolisms are going to be bad, and they're not going to have good performances. And as a result, they'll maybe be successful if they're an elite fighter, but that'll only last so long. And for the other guys that could have made it into an elite category, a semi-elite category, they won't make it. So I think if anything that these fighters can understand is really to try to learn more about, you know, how to lose weight properly, how to stay in shape between a fight. They need a trainer that cares about that, you know, that just says, oh, okay, yeah, go do your road work or just relax in between and, you know, show up, you know, a few weeks before and we'll have you lose weight. And I think it just takes education. And so one thing that these guys can do is they can contact VADA for assistance on that as well. Besides the aspect of actually using, you know, supplements that could be illegal or dangerous, we're happy to help with that too. They can contact us for that kind of information. But I think it's just on an aspect of staying healthy. You know, it's funny. I mean, for some reason, you've got, I don't know if you do this full time, but if you don't do this full time and you have another job, you know that you have to show up for your job and you have to, you know, stay in shape for your job. It may not be physical shape, but it'll be mental shape. But for some reason, fighters don't understand that that's part of what they need to do to be a professional boxer. You know, that's what their job is to stay in shape while they have their career. And this kind of, you know, vicious cycle of going up and down in weight and just abusing their body on so many different levels with dehydration and overhydration and all that crap just ruins them. And they, who knows how good some of these guys would have been if they would have taken that care. So if anything, I think that that's important to get out there.
Is it fair to say that boxers...
I
was just going to say, is it fair to say that boxers are just really irresponsible?
No, I don't think it's that. I don't, you know, and obviously everybody's got to take responsibility for their own life, and that's one thing we were talking about. And, you know, every time somebody shows up with a positive drug test, they like to say, well, it's something that somebody gave them. But they're really responsible for what they take. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, you run through a stop sign, it's not a good example that, you know, you're not going to get away with it that you didn't see the stop sign. So it's this thing. I mean, I don't think they're irresponsible. I think that the way that fighters are brought up from the amateurs, and most of these guys do have amateur careers, there's this mentality where somebody else takes care of everything for them. And I think that that's just the wrong mentality, that they need to be taught to start taking care of these things for themselves. You know, I'll give you a stupid example. I'm sure you won't care about too much, but it was funny. I was watching on CNN the other day, and they were talking about the Girl Scouts. Okay, like, I mean, I was never a Girl Scout, but they were talking about the Girl Scouts. And what they're doing in Girl Scouts now so that these girls get medals, you know, it's not like collecting enough butterflies. Now, these young girls have to show that they understand finances. They have to understand how to save their money. They have to start understanding the stock market. They have to understanding, you know, what an IRA is. And so, bottom line is, you know, here you've got the Girl Scouts. But a fighter needs to understand that not only on a financial level but also on a physical level and taking care of their health. And so I don't think it's irresponsibility. You know, maybe that's an element of it. I think it's just the way they're brought up, and it just breeds it year after year, so that by the time they get to the professionals and they're, you know, as they go along in their career, their body can't handle what the torture they put themselves in to make weight, and then they start performing badly. So I don't think it's irresponsibility. I think it's putting the information out there accessible for them so that they can make their own decisions.
But there's also, I mean, there's the other side. I mean, there's the dark side of it that, to me, I don't know about you, but like seeing like Ryan Braun, he's accepting his, you know, National League MVP, even though he got caught with synthetic testosterone in his system.
And then you see Chris Cyborg. Well, she you know, got a penalty. She's out for a year. But, you know, she took Gina Carano's I always kind of looked at her and thought she was using, and now she got caught. And she didn't get caught with just anything. She got caught with Sinazolol. She got caught with a horse, something you give to horses. It says, you know, for equine only on it. So you don't take that by accident. On some level, I mean, if it's not about, you know, it's not about breaking down people's doors and waking them up in the middle of the night and catching them cheating, but it's just basically what you're saying, Vada, is more... Is it that, or is it being a sheriff, or is it just about protecting the fighters to you?
You know, I think it has to be a little of both. I mean, obviously, that's really the job of the athletic commission in one respect. If athletic commissions would take that role, unfortunately, not very many do, and are not doing it in the right way or thoroughly enough. But it's mostly, I think, about educating them, you know, because this is what you have to say. I get this from patients all the time. You know, if you're going to tell them not to do something, what's the alternative? You know, no, everybody wants to win. Everyone wants to look good. Everyone wants the TV contract. People want to be on HBO or Showtime. You know, how can you say, you know, you can't do all this stuff when somebody they know next to them is doing it and is ending up succeeding? So you have to be able to educate them on what are ways that they can train and advance themselves so that they don't have to do this crap and that they don't have to destroy their body and, you know, that they understand the dangers of it. So, I mean, I think there's an element of that as well, and it takes time, you know. It just takes time, and it takes a – I think the bottom line is people tend to denigrate fighters. They tend to think that boxers are not as smart. And I think boxers are very smart. I think it takes an incredible amount of intelligence to be a professional fighter. And I think that intelligence should be also focused in other avenues. You know, I know some conditioning guys out there that are great, that sit and talk to the fighters and explain to them, and they want to know. I mean, look at somebody like, you know, Nonito Donaire, look at you know, Berto. I mean, I think these guys want to know about what's going into their body and why and what's making them better and what's not. Look at somebody like Bernard Hopkins. I mean, you think Bernard Hopkins doesn't know what he's putting in his own body? You know, he's a very intelligent guy, and I think that one reason why Bernard has lasted so long and one reason why Floyd always looks good is because they take care of themselves between fights. You know, I think that's the main thing.
Well, that's going to be interesting, is to see if, you know, the way boxing politics moves, who knows who gets a shot to fight a Floyd Mayweather. But him in particular, because he's put up, he wants USADA testing. And say Berto moves into that position where he can fight him, and he wants VADA testing. Could we see a fight where one guy uses his own protocol and the other guy uses his?
I'm sure you could. I mean, how could
well,
you
one
say
guy declines
any...
and says, I don't want to do the VADA, but you go right ahead? I wonder.
Yeah, I definitely think that's possible. I mean, I could never be against USADA testing. I mean, I think USADA does an excellent job and always has. I mean, they're, you know, the gold standard. I think that if a fighter wants to do, let's say, VADA testing and their opponent doesn't, that's the you know, the decision of that opponent. I personally don't put anything on that if they decide not to do it. I was talking to somebody the other day, and this is what, and you guys were talking about this earlier, which is I think is a kind of a sad way to look at it, is one of the athletes was, or they were thinking about it. They were thinking about, you know, doing VADA testing, and then the promoter said to me, well, but you know, my guy really doesn't think his opponent is doing it, so why should he then? Because he knows he's not. So if he doesn't think his opponent is, what's the point? And I understand that mentality, but that's not the point. The point is I think for fighters to want to do something positive for the sport, this is a way they can take control and even advance regulations by doing it themselves. You know, unfortunately, boxing doesn't have a real association, a league for the fighters. They have, you know, less control over everything that happens than they should, and they end up relying on athletic commissions that may or may not do a good job. This is another way they can kind of take control over regulations and advance the regulations themselves. And I'm hoping that down the road this will be more of an illustrative point to athletic commissions to kind of step up their programs.
You guys are setting the bar. I mean, this is the first time. I don't know how far we want to get into exactly what the tests are so people don't, you know, figure out how to beat them. But you're using something that's existed for 10 years but has been resisted by, I think, USADA and WADA, certainly in the screening process, is the carbon isotope ratio testing. It's a very aggressive testing system that you've put up. Talk to me about why that was important to you to use that in the way that you're using it.
Well, I think it's really important because, number one, I think it's very useful, and I think that it will certainly, if it was done on a regular basis in all sports, when they do drug testing, I think it would be more of a deterrent, because bottom line is that kind of testing can often pick up when somebody has used testosterone that wouldn't be picked up by a normal test. I mean, I think you guys are so savvy. You know all this, is that you know, now a lot of fighters are using the old-fashioned things like the Strike Force lady just used, Santos, that they're using shorter-acting testosterone agents that come in creams and gels that can be out of somebody's system within a couple of days. And the CIR testing that we're including usually is only done, and is still predominantly only done, I don't know of anybody doing this other than us, that it was only done if somebody has a high testosterone to epitestosterone ratio. In other words, if somebody takes an anabolic steroid test and it looks like they're using because of this ratio, then they do the CIR testing. Well, we're doing the CIR testing every time we test somebody, so that it's much harder to escape detection, because that will pick up a shorter acting testosterone product. So to me, that's really important. I mean, I wanna do state of the art. I wanna do something that's you know, more bang for your buck, so to speak. I mean, all the testing can be expensive. You know, it's funny. I was looking at an article, and I think I sent this to Gabe about, you know, the UFC talking about expanding their testing, you know, when they're going to hire somebody and signing up. And they were talking in there about that the test cost $200. I have not seen a really invasive anabolic steroid test with masking agents and looking at EPO and maybe looking at some other things that's only going to cost $200. And I'm not trying to throw that out. I'm just saying that's a very naive way of looking at things. And if they're only going to do a test that's going to be a $200 test, you know, and even though the UFC has all this money, if they're only going to do that, that certainly isn't going to pick up most of the athletes out there that are much more savvy these days in using much shorter acting agents. So I think that, you know, that's just naivete and inexperience. Trust me, it took me at least 8 to 9 months to understand what's going on now, not only in the underground, but also on a regular basis in performance-enhancing drug use, and how to detect it and how to do this on a thoroughly pervasive level. Because, you know, you can do this the wrong way, and it can still cost you a lot of money, but you really need to do it the right way if you want to have it a program that's a deterrent. So it took a huge amount of education on my part to kind of understand this and understand what's going on with athletes. So anyway.
Well, let me ask you this. How can, you know, because there's a sponsorship, there's a donation, how can people find you guys? How can we, how can they get involved and begin, you know, interacting with WADA?
Well, I think one thing is for them to go to our website and understand what we're about. And I think anybody that's really interested in donating or participating on any level, especially anybody that, you know, has a, I don't know, an organization or a company that would like to be part of this, is to contact me, and then I can, you know, tell them more about what we're about, what we're trying to do. And I think that they would realize that, you know, this is a good thing to be a part of. And I think that, you know, it would be good, I hate to put it this way, but it would be good advertisement for them as well. You know, it's funny, we were contacted by some supplement companies that are out there, people that have stores and things like that, and I was talking to our attorney, and I was talking to our scientific director, and they said, whoa, Margaret, you know, be careful here. We got to really check what these people are putting out, because even some things that you can buy in some of these nutrition stores will have illegal substances, and the last thing we want to do is accept, you know, donations from people that are involved with illegal substances that they're selling on a regular basis. So, you know, it's important for them to check us out, and it's important for us to check them out a little bit. But they can certainly contact me at any time through our website, and I will get the emails directly and respond to them.
And I don't want to be send you in like an aggressive direction, but I was interested. You showed me that story about what the UFC is doing, and we kind of saw two different things. I'm wondering, is that just kind of a Band-Aid, or I mean, telling them, okay, when you sign up with us, we're going to test you. If somebody's cheating, like, thanks for telling me when I need to miss a test.
I know.
Is it like a publicity stunt, or is it real, or where are they going?
You know, I think it's real, but I agree with you. I think it's just a Band-Aid. And I think, number one, I don't mean to be – it sounds so holier-than-thou or derogatory, but it's just a naive way of looking at the problem. I mean, I believe that MMA has an even greater problem with performance-enhancing drugs than boxing. I just do. I mean, and I think from experience, in looking at the numbers of athletes that test positive, well, you can say maybe the boxers are smarter because they're not found out. But I really just think that they just have a bigger problem. I think that they've, you know, it's just something that's just been a part of their sport for many, many years. And I think it's just carrying over as MMA becomes more and more popular. The fighters have to fight more often, et cetera. So I don't think it's just a publicity stunt. I just think that it's naivete and not really understanding that if they really want to solve the problem, they can't do it that way. They have to hand it over to a third party, whoever that is. You know, doing the testing themselves is a conflict of interest. That's wrong. And they have to do the right testing. You know, it's funny. I think I said this to you the last time when we spoke is, you know, a patient comes into my office and I ask to see their blood test and they go, oh, my blood tests were negative. And then I say, well, what blood test did you have? And they go, oh, I had everything. And they may have had, you know, 10 blood tests, but they weren't the ones that I was looking for. And there's thousands of blood tests that somebody can undergo. So, you know, anytime these organizations say that they're doing testing, the question is what you guys ask is what testing are they doing? You know, not just when are they doing it and is it unannounced testing, but what actually are the tests? And, you know, I think that's a problem is that everyone in these articles that I read so often, especially related to MMA, they go, well, they're, you know, UFC is adding quote unquote testing. Well, what are these tests? You know, yeah. are they testing for EPO? Are they testing for blood doping, which I know is a huge problem in MMA right now? You know, that's something that needs to be covered. And so I don't know if it's just the writers aren't asking or maybe they're afraid to ask some of these guys.
I don't think they're educated. That'd be my guess. I mean, it's taken me about a year and a half of serious study to, and even then I still, you know, there's things that I don't know, but to even have the conversation, it takes a lot of self-education. It's a subject, you know, you have to go to the gyms and find out the guys that know how to do it or have had a history with it or, I'm not saying in the gyms. I'm saying you have to go around and explore the culture and find it and then learn about it, you know, and use Wikipedia. I guess the whole point is if you're smart, you invest in someone that's coming up with a way to do genetic scanning because that's probably where we're headed at some point.
Right.
Buy stock in that company. Well, Margaret, I appreciate it. I know you have to get going. I really appreciate you coming on. If you guys can follow them at do you know the Twitter offhand?
Boy, you're asking the wrong person.
It's at Vada underscore testing. I think another underscore.
That's it. Or they can go to the website, which is vada-testing.org, and they can contact me through there. But, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on. I appreciate, you know, that you want to have the discussion. I think it's important to have the discussion. You know, you can have the attitude that let everybody take this stuff and who cares. But you know, sport, especially boxing, you know, boxing's such a wonderful sport. You know, the fighters deserve a fair fight. You know, they deserve a safe fight, as safe as it can be. And if you allow performance-enhancing drugs and a lot of these methods, it certainly takes the fairness and it definitely affects the safety.
Sure. You know, everything else, it seems to be equal for the most part. You'd hope that you know, what's in them is as well. Well, thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. And
all right, thank
we'll
you,
catch
guys.
Up with you soon, anytime.
All right, take care.
All right, good night. I'm not sure if Dave's still here, so I'm going to go with the guy that's hanging with me in the bullpen. I know he wants to get probably somewhere to have something to eat. Mr. Joel Diaz, Jr., fresh from his weigh-in. Joel, are you there? Are you still on mute? Wow. I think everybody dropped off. Wow, I think I'm totally alone in this world right now. Let me try this again. Well, you guys, this is live theater or live radio, and if I don't keep talking, it's going to be dead air. So what we're going to do is we're going to get to the Max Boxing schedule done by Mr. Marty Mulcahy. He bails me out each week. Oh, and here we go with Joel Diaz, Jr. I'll be right back, folks. Well, how are you,
yeah,
man?
Sorry about that, Gabe.
Oh, don't even worry about it, dude. I just I had to call an audible. I wasn't ready. How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Just getting back from eating and making weight, man. So we're ready for tomorrow.
Oh, you already had your dinner. Good.
Yeah, correct.
You stay pretty much in the gym all the time, though, right? Your last fight was November. How soon back did you, you know, how long did it take for you to get back in the gym?
Actually, after my last fight, I was back at the gym once again. I was out of a training camp for a whole December. But when I went back home to go see my son, well, that's the only reason why I go back to Palmdale. That's the only reason I'm not in training camp to go see my son. I'm still training down in AV boxing. They told me I'm more than welcome there, so I'm there every day. Well, I was out for the holidays, so basically I never leave the gym, like you said.
Yeah, you know, I haven't always been the host of this show. I'm not sure. You've never been on the show before, have you?
No.
Let's back up then and go. For those of you that don't read my stuff, so they don't know you. How did you walk into a boxing gym? How did you get to this point, or how did you begin?
Well, my dad actually, he's the one that got me into the sport when I was 8. He always wanted to be a boxer, but he didn't have that push. Nobody there to push him, to give him that extra push, you know. So he had me, and he was like, you know what, let's give boxing a shot. So we stuck to it since 8, but never stopped since then.
What is it that did you feel like it was home the first time you walked in a boxing gym? What was that like?
Well, the first time I ever walked in that boxing gym, it was kind of nervous. I was nervous, you know. I was seeing everybody hitting the bags, sparring, and stuff like that. The only thing I was fearing is to get knocked out. You know, I didn't want to get in there and get knocked out. So that was my only fear. But other than that, I was like, you know what, I like the sport, let's do this. And next thing you know, I started doing it, and I didn't get knocked out. So that was just a little nervousness. It was a little thing that went through my mind, but it's all cleared now.
You started out, I think, when you had two fights in 2010, right? That's where you turned pro, and then 2011 was a big year for you. You signed with Boxing 360, and you just started to get busy. But you also made another change. You switched trainers to Hector Velades. Talk to me about that transition.
Well, like you said, the two fights in 2010, it was with Felipe Avalos, Christopher Avalos, his dad. I mean, I gave that guy a lot of respect. He was my trainer. You know, not only that, he was a trainer, he was like more of a father also. But I give him a lot of respect. I was with them for 10 years, and you know, I had to step it up. He told me at the gym one time after practice, if you could go to somebody else and they could teach you better than me, or they could teach you new stuff, handle it, do it, and you know, he won't be mad. And that's what I did. And Hector, he, I went to go spar at Wildcard one day. He loved the way I was working, and he told me, you know, I have a future ahead of me, and you're more than welcome to stay at my house. I pay the bills. I pay the food and everything, just as long as you keep doing what you're doing. And that's it. He welcomed me into his house like his own son. And from there, we have four fights with him. All of them didn't even last two rounds. First round knockouts, and I'm pretty good. I'm pretty confident with him. You know, I feel like I could achieve a lot of things with him.
You know, your first guy was like a, you know, 0-2-1. It was like a pro debut guy. Next guy had a bunch of fights. He was like, he had 11 fights, and you went the distance with him. And then you switch over with Velatis, and you've knocked out dudes. You know, the first two guys weren't as experienced, but the next guy had a winning record, knocked him out in the first round. Last guy had like 55 fights, knocked him out in the
first round.
I'm probably not even doing the math right on that one. I think he had like 60-something fights. I'm a high school dropout, so what do I do?
It's just coming from the head. It's all good, man. It's all good. we're in the same boat, actually. So,
oh, is that right?
Nice. Yeah, but I mean, we don't like to talk about it, you know.
Hey, man.
If it comes up, it comes up.
Exactly. So, talk to me about that fight. You know, because you just or this role that you've been on. You know, what do you think about this? What was it that clicked for you that you started knocking people out in the first round?
I mean, they gave me my opponents, and if I could finish them off the first round, I could finish them off the first round like these four guys that came my way. But everybody's not the same, Gabriel. You know, everybody has a different style, and I don't want to think I could knock everybody out in the first round. So that's where my manager and my promoter Mario and Mike come in. I told them, you know what, I don't want to think I could just rely one on one punch and knocking everybody out in the first round. I need for you guys to give me a challenge for I could experience more rounds, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, they worked on it and they got me this fight. I was supposed to be fighting in Woodland Hills tomorrow, and I got a call last Wednesday, and they asked me if I want to be the co-main event under Rico Ramos on Showbox. And I mean, who wouldn't turn that down, you know? So we jumped on that, and now we're here. Now we just made weight. We're good on weight. We had dinner. Now we're ready to rumble for tomorrow.
You know, it was weird. I always think of your left hook. Yeah, it's the first time I saw you sparring. I think you were playing with Alacran, Velades' other fighter. You guys do like three rounds, and I was like, oh, this guy likes the left hook, you know, and it's nasty. But you use the right hand with Sarabia more. You feel more balanced now? It's a little more comfortable?
Like you were saying, my new trainer Hector, he teaching me a lot of things that Felipe Avalos didn't teach me, you know. I'm learning how to use my right hand. I got taught to use my right hand, and tomorrow, if this guy lasts, then I will show you guys. I could. I'm not only just relying on one punch. I'm a boxer also. I know how to box.
Who do you think you're like? You know, do you watch a lot of boxing? A lot of classes.
Yeah, I box boxing every week and every time it's on, actually. And you just asked me who do I think I'm like. Well,
yeah.
To tell you the truth, myself, I don't really find myself like nobody on myself. I'm Joel Diaz Jr. But
nice.
since I've been here, I've been getting told that I have a similar style to Brandon Rios, I just got here yesterday and today. We still got tomorrow, and I just got told that like about a good 10 times, actually.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Right, it is. You have a similar, seem to be, fighting mentality. But you think fighting is about figuring out who you are? I mean, you do have a strong personality the first time I met you, a strong sense of who you are as a fighter. Is that what it is? Is revealing to yourself more and more what you can do, what you can endure?
Yeah. It's all about, to me, it's all about confidence. if you gotta have a lot of confidence in yourself to step up in the ring. I mean, if you don't have confidence, then you know what are you thinking? I'm gonna lose, and this is that. You gotta go up there with a positive attitude, and me myself, I like to be surrounded with positive thoughts, positive people, and I don't really like no negativity around me. So that's what just makes me me. That's what makes me get in the ring and makes me train. You know, it's the confidence and it's the strength that that God puts me to who I am. You know.
Yeah, it's very California Mexican of you too. You know, work hard and just be in a good mood. You know, as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly, man. Because I mean, we only live one day at a time. You know, I mean, we can't tell what tomorrow's gonna bring us. So that's what I am, man. I like to live one day at a time, and that's what I do. I live one day at a time, and just have a lot of confidence in myself. And I know that I could push myself to the limit and do and achieve this goal that I've been trying to achieve since I was 8 years old.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like we as pros, you're like new to us, but this game isn't new to you.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Guy Robb. What do you know at this point?
Guy
what did
Robb
you get from the weigh-in and everything?
Well, now that I've seen him today, to tell you the truth, he doesn't look 5'6". We're the same size, actually. I think he's like 5'8", and I'm almost there, 5'8". We're probably the same size. What I was telling, like I was telling everybody else, I was gonna work my distance with him. I'm still gonna work my reach and I'm still gonna use my distance with him. You know, try to use my jabs. I'm gonna use my jabs a lot with him. But this guy, Guy Robb. He's just like any other guy, you know. I'm just going to try to take him out before he tries to take me out, and I possibly don't think he's gonna take me out, because he's not, man. I have a good feeling about this. I'm very confident about this fight, and we've been training good, conditioning, and we're ready for whatever he brings to the ring.
Is there a part of you that kind of wants to go rounds? You know, he's gone rounds in his last couple fights.
I actually want. I actually wanted a challenge, like I was telling you, and they're giving me a challenge. I want to show everybody that I know how to box also, I don't want to show everybody that I just like to rely on one punch, even though one punch is great. I mean, even though it stops it, you know. I mean, I don't have to worry about going the distance, but I want to show box. I want to show everybody, all the fight fans, that I know how to box also.
Awesome, man. Well, I wish you all the luck. I have a good feeling, you know. You're a hard worker, man, and I hope you have a great 2012.
Thank you, man. Appreciate this interview that you're giving me, and likewise, hope you have a great 2012. I'm pretty sure this is not going to be the last time we talk.
yeah, me too.
I'm looking forward to talking to you again, Gabriel.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Likewise.
Hi.
Well, there you have it. Joel Diaz Jr. It's going to be a good fight, man. This guy Robb is not a joke. And you really look at him, this is Joel's first time. And damn it, as soon as the subject walks away, you always come up with that last question you should have asked. Joel hasn't faced an undefeated guy like this. He's faced a guy with a winning record, but he hasn't faced a guy that's undefeated. And Guy Robb has. Two fights ago, he went the distance, six rounds, with Pablo Armenta, who was 6-0-1 at the time. He did this in San Diego. He won comfortably, so he's had the experience. And in the next fight, he knocked a guy out, TKO-5, Hugo Ramos, who was 3-10 on a five-fight losing streak. So, it's, you know, there might be some smoke and mirrors there. But he's got some rounds underneath him. Joel is on a four-fight, first-round knockout streak against, you know, some increasingly good opposition or experienced opposition. So he's definitely the underdog here. I'm going with Joel Diaz Jr., though. I have a feeling about this kid, but I think it's going to be a test. I think it's going the distance. But we'll see. Guy Robb could outbox him. The distance almost kind of favors him because I think he is more of a boxer. considering he's only got, he's 7-0, he's only got 3 knockouts. So there's not a lot of power going on there. But he's also getting better. I mean, his last fight was in fact a stoppage win. So still, I'm going with the upset special. I'm going Joel Diaz over Guy Robb. We've got about 8 minutes left. I'm going to veer off into something that I've been working on, just because Dave's gone, and so we have probably like some space, you know, where he'd be talking right now about the, you know, the subject that I was just talking about, giving his take. So I'm going to fill it up with the video that I did. It's Gina Carano and Gabriel Montoya go haywire. We do an interview about a new movie. I don't really, you know, I think I have good taste in movies. I grew up watching movies. My earliest memories, I think my first film was All the President's Men. I think I was like 3 years old, seeing that in the theaters. So when I recommend a movie, you know, I say, you know, go see it. Trust me on this one. Gina Carano, it's kind of like watching Bruce Lee for the first time, how it must have been for American audiences. You know, some of the lines he's saying, you know, like, why don't you get a 45 and settle it? They're kind of goofy. We make fun of them. They're classics now. But we forgave him the bad acting or the wonky acting for when he went into action and he was actually doing what he was supposed to be doing on screen. It was an unparalleled thing to see, him showing the fluidity of the Jeet Kune Do, the style or with no style that he created and brought to us in the screen. Like Enter the Dragon must have just blown people's minds. And watching this in the Chinese theater, the famed Man's Chinese Theater a few weeks back, I was taken by Gina Carano, the way she moves. It's a spy movie, the classic Lone Samurai, screwed by the people that hired her, and she goes back to get revenge on each one of them. It could be a man. She happens to be a woman. Check out the clip. The last line kind of says it all. To just think of her as a woman would be a mistake. The fight scenes are amazing. They're shot so perfectly. He just captures the action, and I think audiences have never seen this style of fighting, going to ground, going back up, and locks and things like that. They're going to be blown away. There's like 4 centerpiece action scenes, and each one of them just gets crazier and crazier. So I'm recommending a movie for the weekend, and I think I've killed enough time so I can go into the weekend fight schedule and get us out of the show. At the Palms Casino, Friday night in Las Vegas, Nevada, Showtime, Showbox, The Next Generation, Rico Ramos, 20-0, versus Guillermo Rigondeaux, 8-0. For the WBA junior featherweight title. I like my man Rigo. I like him in 8, maybe 9, but I like him in 8. I think he outboxes him, he breaks him down, confuses him. Ramos gets a little desperate, tries for that left hook gold, and boom, out go with the lights. In support of that, Joel Diaz and Guy Robb, 7-0 versus 6-0. I'm going with Diaz. Also on the card, Matthew Villanueva, 6-0-1, versus Michael Ruiz. This is also a good fight. I'm kind of leaning towards Villanueva, but Ruiz is a bad man. I think he comes to win. Screw it. I'm going with Villanueva, 6-0-1, 8-1-1 for Ruiz. And Javier Molina will be returning on this card as well after the loss that he suffered. I'm going to say Javi pulls it out in a decision. Damn you, Dave. It's your editorial condensa in Mexico City, Mexico. On Telemundo, Luis De La Rosa, 18-1-1 versus Ivan Menestia, 16-9-1. You know, I don't really have a big opinion on it. I'm going with De La Rosa. I don't know why. At the Palacio Arenegro in Puerto Madryn, Argentina, Lucas Batiste, 29-2 versus Jim Rex. Jaca, 34-6-3. One of my all-time favorite names, Jim Rex, is not going to win this fight. And we move to Saturday, January 21st, 2012, the Coliseo Olimpico in Guadalajara, Mexico. Miguel Vasquez, 29-3 versus Amat Diaz, 30-10. I'm taking Miguel Vasquez on this one for the IBF lightweight belt, taking him by TKO in the 8th. We're just going 8 across the board tonight. In support there is Daniel Sandoval, 22-2, versus Alvaro Aguilar, 22-1. Ricardo Alvarez also rounds out the card, and Jocelyn Arroyo, both facing the dreaded TBA. At the Asylum Arena, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on NBC Sports, Jesus Soto Carras, 24-6-3, versus Gabriel Rosado, 18-5. Maurice Byron, 13-0-1. And Bryant Jennings, 11-0, are in support. I'm going with Jesus Soto Caras, and I'm going with Jennings. Also, Ray Robinson is on the card. Wow, he's still fighting after all these years. Elsewhere in the world, at the Hamilton Manor in Hamilton Township, New Jersey, Omar Shika, 30-11 versus Charles Hayward, 7-3. Wow. Ahmad Kadour, 24-2-1 versus Terrence Coffin, 36-7 in support. And that is pretty much your weekend fight schedule. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been wonderful. It's been really strange. Probably the oddest show that we've ever done. Dave just disappeared into the night. We've got about 30 seconds left. All I got to say is thank you very much for staying with me through this kind of special evening where I had to fly solo, see what it's like to be alone in the world. Boxing fans, I'll see you next week. Peace.